Our support team from Parliament and all those that are part of the meeting, greetings to you all. Today we have invited you, SDM and your team, to do a presentation for us on an issue that we have been almost in all our meetings raising comments on it, the issue of the immovable asset register. But this time, as we have heard from you, that you have managed to update it, so we are expecting to get that presentation by PMTE. We are doing that because this is one of the items that usually comes up when Auditor General raises his opinion on your book, the issue of immovable asset register. I remember at one time that when you gave us an explanation, you said that you had to change because Auditor General has raised the issue that your opening balance is not the same as the one that you presented in the previous year. So I don't understand where this thing has occurred, and you indicated that you had to do it again and all that thing, but Auditor General picked up. And remember, what is the Auditor General? It's in the public opinion. So it is then crucial that whatever that you bring to us is something that as people that are doing oversight will do. It's something that we can stand proudly and say, they have done this, they have moved from this. The real issue, DM, is that when it comes to the assets of the department, I think we can all agree that it's chaotic, if I can put it crudely. It's really chaotic. In fact, even in the Minister's speech, when we were doing the budget vote, the Minister promised that he is going to try and deal with all those that take the assets of the department without the proper procedures. And I believe that if we had an immovable asset register which was up to date, which was correct, it would be easy to see that a certain asset has been moved. A certain asset, we no longer listing it now. A certain asset, all those things, you would see them and say, just putting your finger and then those things would come up. But because the asset register has questions, you can't see that someone has occupied that house illegally, someone has taken that particular property illegally, because our asset register is not in order. But you have indicated several times that you have managed to move from the state that you came in 2019, and as such, you have updated it. So the presentation of today, then it goes there. But what we would appeal to whoever that will be presenting SDM, acting DG, is that by now, it's 2023, and the reality is that the majority of the members of this committee have been with the committee since 2019. I think it's only Honorable Fikolo who joined us this year. So we in fact know the historical background. So we would appeal that whoever is going to present, what's that with the historical background? I know if there is a presentation, but it's something that we know, because it's something that you have been telling us since 2019. So if then you cannot start there, because we would like to have more time on engagement with this report than on the presentation itself. So with those few words, I'm welcoming you all in the meeting and hoping that it's going to be a progressive meeting. But can we, okay, Deputy Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning to
all the members of the Portfolio Committee and the officials. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, the agenda item today is a very important agenda item, which is in the form of the asset register, of which myself and the Minister, when we got to the department as well, have requested several presentations to be given to us, because indeed it is in the public knowledge and interest that the public works begins to have a credible asset register. I call it, always call it credible, because for me is that if we are saying that we do have an asset register, the asset register must talk to what we have and where it is situated, what its value is, those that are maintainable, when last they've been maintained. Because if we say that we have upgraded the asset register, myself and the Minister are always asking questions. So to me, it's of importance that your last closing remarks in the last Portfolio Committee, Chair, was that if there's one thing this Portfolio Committee should at least do in this term before the term ends, is that you would have achieved having an agenda item called the asset register, having some progress in it that will give South Africans the hope that we do have an asset register. However, for me, where I'm seated at Chair is that the little bit of time that I've been in the department and us following this year, you need to start beginning having an accountant to be the custodian of this asset register. You see, when we are doing things in the department, we must align them to a certain skill. So where I'm seated at is that at the end of the day, you would begin wanting to have an accountant that is the one who actually verifies and looks at our assets, and not just have somebody in real estate or somebody that is capable of dealing with land and assets. I am not saying that the officials who are currently doing it are not credible, but I'm saying that when we start aligning what will work for us, at the end of the day, you do need an accountant to say, these are the assets of the state, and this is what we want must happen. Because for me, what happens is that every day, check, people will tell you that there's a piece of land, there's a building here, there's a building there, and officials will have to go and verify, look at it, whether it's a public works they're building, they'll have to go to the municipality. It's a long thing, because the properties of DPWI is not just a pieces of land there and there, but what I'm saying is that every day, that is why when I speak about the asset register, I always want to use the English word credible, so that when we say credible, we are able to put an address, we are able to put a value, we are able even to check whether this asset of public works, is it registered at the dean's office, where is it situated? Has that building ever been evaluated if it's a building that is not dilapidated? And also, even in the asset register, we must be able to say which of our buildings are not repairable and must be disposed of, and how would it be disposed of. So those are questions that relatively myself I've had when it was presented to us, Chair. But I agree with the committee chair that when it comes to the Auditor General and its findings and where we are today, at least the department should have a made stride. But more importantly for me is that what is it really that is going to be a solution in terms of having a credible asset register, which the AG will at the end of the day agree with. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The Acting DG will guide us in terms of the official who will present to us. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I have with me the DDG for Real Estate Investment Services, Mr. Sasuben, and the Chief Information Officer. And I'll give Sasa to then introduce the flow of the presentation. I'm understanding we have two parts of the presentation. Mrs. Sokela for the Real Estate Registry Services and the team from ICT. Ms. Sasa, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, MDG. Good morning, Deputy Minister Chairperson, honorable members. I'm Sasa Subin, and I caretake the Real Estate Information Registry Services branch. I think DM alluded to, in terms of what we're trying to achieve going forward, to find an appropriate head to head the branch. However, Chairperson, honorable members, we're here and we appreciate the opportunity. I think we've been also asking that in various platforms that we come and present on the immovable asset register and that we also have a live demonstration to take members through in terms of what we've achieved thus far on the immovable asset register. Just a little bit of context, our immovable asset register is massive, it's complex. It's also got to be, like DM has indicated, it's got to be GRAP compliant. Currently, we're sitting with over 29,169 land parcels and over 80,631 improvements on the DPWI asset register. We also have this ability in terms of our concurrence mandate, and we've been supporting our provincial counterparts in terms of developing their immovable asset register as well. I know Chairperson has indicated that we don't look at too much on the historical context, so therefore I'm just going to ask Mr. Benito, Mr. Sokala, to focus on 17, 21, 23, 25, 27, those particular slides, and thereafter, Chairperson, we will have a presentation on the movable asset register that is on RCBUS. We've moved, we were on a static repository, members recall, the movable asset register was on a static Excel repository and we've moved that accordingly since 2019 onto the RCBUS, and that Mr. Mongi Simelani will present on that. Then it will be followed by Lebogang Modiba and Ms. Luna Kosa will also show us the GIS mapping. Now the GIS, currently the modules don't sit on RCBUS, but as we move forward and enhance the immovable asset register, that will be accordingly integrated. Although it is not on the RCBUS, you will see that the demonstration will show the linkages with between the movable asset register and the RCBUS system. So Chairperson, I will pause there and I thank you. I'll hand over to the Benito to be brief based on Chairperson's direction. Thank you.
Sorry, DDG, can I ask those slide numbers again, please?
Thank you. I've asked that we focus on 17, 21, 23, 25, 27 very quickly, and it will be followed by the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, Acting DG, and colleagues from the Department of Public Works. Yes, on this slide, basically, here we explain the maintenance of the asset register. One of our strategic objectives is to maintain a complete and compliant immovable asset register, which supports the business of CMTE and service delivery objectives of the state. So what do we mean by maintaining the asset register? First, our approach is to address management assertions. By management assertions, we are referring to completeness. Is the asset register complete in terms of quantity? For instance, the main source is peat, because our main asset is actually the land. Then the improvements are actually sub-assets. So we utilize various sources, of course, most especially the deeds, to assess completeness. But also completeness is not only limited to quantity. The other aspect of completeness is to comply with the minimum requirements for an immovable asset register, which were issued by National Treasury. There's about 22 fields that those fields are compulsory, like you must have a location, a title deed, etc. Those are compulsory fields. So when you're talking about the asset register, those fields must be populated. And the next assertion is existence. So once you have confirmed the quantity, to say, according to the deeds record, this is the quantity of the land parcels that fall under the custodianship of the Department of Public Works. Then the next step to say, okay, you have it on the system, it exists on paper, but do they exist on the ground? Because that's very important. Even the Auditor General, the audit has just commenced. We submitted the annual financial statement and supporting schedules to the Auditor General on the 31st of May. The audit has commenced on the 1st. We're actually engaging with the officials from the Office of the Auditor General. So when it comes to existence, they select a sample. The sample of land parcels and the sample of the building, whereby we'll physically go to site with AG officials to validate now the existence of those land parcels and of those properties. Whether it's a multi-story, whether it's a single-story, whether it's a police station, we've got different types of assets in the department. So also, the other method that the AG utilized in terms of validating existence, it's not only physical verification, but it's also through desktop. In our team, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, and DM, in our team, we have a GIS specialist. In fact, our team consists of, we have various specialists, DM, even accountants. We also have accountants in our team, and even chartered accountants, myself as well. When I joined, my background is finance as well. So we have all the different specialists. So even the GIS, so AG will select a sample, say for instance, 300 land parcels, what we call land verification. And then they will sit with the GIS technicians to validate the existence, because you can actually view those properties using technology. You'll see when we take you through the demonstration, it's two demonstrations, as the DDG pointed out. One is on Archibus, the system, our repository, and the other demonstration is on GIS. This is to validate existence. The third assertion is right and obligation. Because as we all know, that's why we talk about the history. Because of our history as government, we have common historical names like the Republic of South Africa. There's so many names. So, but we engage all other custodians as well, both at national and provincial level. So in terms of allocating the properties, who is the custodian? Even the vesting as well will actually assist, because in terms of vesting, to say what is the use or intended use as of 27 April 1994. There's always sometimes a dispute between national and provincial custodians about the use or the custodianship of some facilities, more especially as government. We know we might have a police station and a clinic built on the same land parcel. So the solution there is to subdivide that particular land parcel. So apart from rights and obligation, then we have valuation. In terms of valuation, now this is the value. We have had challenges in the past at DM with AG, but we managed to address this issue where we had to apply what we call a fair value, a dim cost model. We tried to use the historical cost. When I joined the department, the best way is to trace the historical cost of these properties. However, it was just impossible because there were no records. We tried everything to say, for instance, the Union Building. How much did it cost, you know, to build the Union Buildings? It was just not possible. However, we approached National Treasury to develop what we call the dim cost model that was presented to Treasury and also to the Office of the Auditor General. It was approved, and then we started applying this dim cost model in order to determine the value of our assets. In fact, the year 2021, when we obtained an unqualified audit on the IR, the issues on the deemed cost on valuation were actually resolved in 2021. And then, of course, then it's presentation and disclosure. Then the second bullet point is just to say, in terms of the site, the chairperson raised the issue. We manage the life cycle of assets in terms of Section 13D of KIAMA, whereby, according to that section or immovable asset management policy, we need to ensure that we verify our assets at least once every 5 years. At least we go to site and conduct a condition assessment. Our condition assessment It's actually high level, but we obtain enough information that will also assist with facilities and management, and also to do impairment on certain properties if there was flooding, if there was fire, or if there were damage. We need to adjust, and AG again, they will test this, that if we conducted impairment on certain properties like the parliamentary building that was burned, for instance, and or in KZN where there was flooding or other areas where maybe there were riots or our buildings were affected. So we need to adjust the value of those buildings. Well, vesting, cash on vesting, and also even in terms of the construction, the assets that are constructed, we also need to recognize those assets. Some of these assets are built, some of the client departments, we had a finding, a DM report, we even wrote a letter to the Minister of Police, whereby the appointed service provider to build some police station or to renovate some of them, and they submitted information. However, AG is querying that information that was provided by SEPS. They were requesting invoices from us. However, as a department, we complied with Section 42 of the PFMA because they provided a substantiating document in terms of the practical completion certificate. The certificate was signed by the accounting officer, and our accounting officer, the DG, accepted that. So we complied with all the regulations. In fact, this issue, yesterday we had a meeting with AG, it has been resolved, because we also engaged National Treasury to actually assist, because we are not the budget. If we are not the budget holder in this instance itself, appointed the service provider, it's their responsibility to keep the invoices and everything else until once the project is now complete, they need to now transfer this project to the custodian, which is public works, in terms of Section 42 of the PFMA. Our job is to do some due diligence and to check the value and other aspects of that asset before we accept it. But that issue, which was an issue even on the audit, it has been resolved. It was actually resolved yesterday. We also talk about componentization of the IR, because facilities management is actually driven by components. So in the building, even in terms of graph, apart from the land in the building, within the building, the question is what components are in the building, because they have a different useful life. Components like your lifts, your aircon, your boilers, your aircon system, etc. So we show them separately, because when they make a call, if there's a problem in this building with the lift, they need to trace the land and the building. So in fact, our facility management, the call center, they utilize the IR module, which is an artifact. We have my colleague here who will take us through the demo. So the call center, they use the IR module in artifacts to make those calls, to trace those facilities. Let me move to slide 21. Basically, slide 21 shows these are our stakeholders, because even when we address the management assertions, your commitment, your system, etc., because of our history as a country, we cannot do that in isolation. So we actually, even the first thing, we do it in collaboration with all these stakeholders. So there's a need for continuous engagement with all this, we refer to them as state land community or our key stakeholders. Like, for instance, the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development, there's also a custodian, one of the main custodians, the Department of Water and Sanitation, the client departments, the Office of the Chief Surveyor General, the Registrar of Deeds, I've touched on deeds, the state attorney, if we need to do any conveyancing or ratification of ownership, the province is one of our key stakeholders, even the municipalities in terms of rates and taxes. We have also engaged the SOEs, because even the SOEs, some of their properties are registered in historical names. And of course, National Treasury. We have continuous engagement with National Treasury because they also issue the guidelines on immovable assets. We move to slide 23. Yes, slide 23. Here it talks about what is completeness of the immovable asset register. Somebody said the asset is the asset register complete? What do we mean by completeness? Number one, we say it is compliant to the National Treasury Immovable Asset Guide. This, it's section 3.2. If you go to that document, we can provide it. Section 3.2 of National Treasury says the Department of Public, it shows the categories of assets that must be recorded by the Department of Public Works. Even AG, when they audit us on completeness, they will actually check whether we have complied with National Treasury guidelines, in particular section 3.2b, which will list various categories of land or properties that must be recorded in the asset register of public works. In fact, apart from the asset elimination, let me say this, apart from the assets that are under the custodianship of public works, public works is also a default custodian of state land. What do I mean by that? Because the principle with National Treasury is that state land must be recorded somewhere. So if you have registered land parcels, according to the deeds records, because some of them are registered in historical names, and none of the national or provincial custodians have claimed custodianship of such land parcels, then as public works, we take that responsibility. That's why when we do the deeds analysis and reconciliation, we sort of allocate these properties as the custodian at national or provincial level. Then if there are assets that are not claimed by anybody, we do a separate disclosure to AG. We call it a deemed list, because as a default custodian, all those land parcels that are registered with a narrative, but that's not only disclosing them. Going further, what we do then, we conduct investigation with other national and provincial custodians to identify the appropriate custodian for such land parcels. Like I said earlier, sometimes, for instance, if a land parcel is registered, the Republic of South Africa, it just says RSA. RSA, the custodian can be anybody, at national and at provincial level. That's why sometimes if it's just RSA, unless you know what is sitting on the ground or what was the use or intended use of the 27 April 1994, you cannot just tell. You need to do some further investigation to actually confirm who is actually the custodian of such land parcels. Yes, so I'll just explain that as a default custodian, because if there are properties that are not recorded by anybody, then it's our responsibility as public works. The second aspect of completeness is reconciliation. So even when we develop the IR of public works, we look at the deeds records, as I've mentioned, property management information system. This is a system, the first system that was actually developed when we compiled the immovable asset register in the late 90s in the department. We also have an Oracle database. The colleagues at GIS will take us through a demo. On that demo, we actually use the Oracle, that is the system. There's also vesting data under rural development. Law is actually a system, so we also check in terms of the properties that are vested. So some years ago, we had a list of devolved properties because public works used to pay rates for all national and provincial departments. And then around 2012-13 thereabouts, we had to devolve these properties. We had to transfer them to the provinces so that they could take responsibility for paying rates and taxes. We also looked at the original title deeds, just apart from the deeds download, because even the deeds download, sometimes the information there is actually not complete. We look at the records of the Office of the Chief Surveyor General. We also utilize the user asset management plan of the various departments. All the client departments, they prepare user asset management plans. So in addressing completeness, we also assess that and reconcile the asset which is against the UM's points of interest and other national and provincial custodians. And the other point in terms of compliance, when we address completeness, we need to ensure that we comply with the PSMA, with GIAMA, and like I said earlier, National Treasury Guidelines, like the minimum requirements. And also, it's also important the capitalization, because we construct, we have a CPM within DPW, so once the projects are complete, it's important that they are recorded in the movable asset register of the department. Number five, Section 42 transfers from user department or transfers from other custodians. So the budget holders, like SEF, I made an example earlier, once the asset is complete, as a budget holder, there's a responsibility to transfer that asset to the custodian, in this case, the Department of Public Works. But there are cases whereby other custodians, some properties were erroneously vested, maybe by provinces, they need to transfer them to Public Works, or the properties that belong to other custodians. So we rectify those issues through the Section 42 transfer. We also report the acquisition of properties, whether it was its purchase, donation, or exchange. And the seventh point is the disposal of properties. Every year, for instance, our minister will make the budget vote speech, will indicate that we are donating some land parcels, maybe for land reform program, or land parcels for RTP, or to build houses for the people, whether in FM or rural areas. Can I proceed to slide 25? Slide 25 basically just gives a background, Chairperson, members of the portfolio committee, and DMs from ADG. It gives a background of the enhancement program in terms of addressing the issues that were raised by AG and even addressing the completeness of the IR, as the DM pointed out, talking about a credible immovable asset register. So that is, this slide shows the process that we followed, because we identified certain gaps within the asset register then in 2011 to 2013, and then we had to look at the things in terms of gap two, and then we appointed service providers to assist us because back then we did not have our own resources to assist us with collecting information, with verification of these properties. That was from 2013, I think 2015. And then the enhancement phase two commenced from 2014 to 2017. Amongst other things, I've already mentioned the capitalization as well as the application of the DIM cost model. Slide 27. It shows the process, the physical verification of assets. This is where now we are addressing the existence assertion. We now have the quantity of our land and buildings. The first step, you'll see that it's desktop GIS mapping and loading of footprints. My colleague will take us through a demo as to how they go about executing this function. Once they have loaded the land and the buildings, then the information will be ready now for field work. The second person, that gentleman wearing red, it's got a tablet. These are the tools that we utilize technology in terms of the software as well as the tools. The information will be loaded on the tablet. Then they go to site. And there are controls as well to say they cannot verify an asset if they are 30 meters away from site. So they must be on site to be able to verify. And then the information will go through the QA there. It's quality assurance, various levels of quality assurance, the information that has been collected, does it comply with the checklist, does it comply with the minimum requirements, etc. As you can see, the green, if it's green, then it's accepted. If it's rejected, and then it will go back, the red line going back. Until when the head office now is happy with the report, then the information will actually be stored here on the server. So the information that we have collected over the years, whether it was the service providers in 2013-15, or let me also point out that we decided also to reduce reliance on service providers, because for phase one, we paid for fiscal verification, we paid about 53 million, which was quite a lot of money, but we did not have our own resources. But when we employed those service providers, we also recruited graduates. We recruited graduates and even other specialists, project managers, and since 2015, we are utilizing our own resources to conduct fiscal verification. We have staff that is based in the regions, deputy directors with the field workers who are responsible for maintaining the asset register. So in that way, in fact, even AG raised this issue that the department must reduce reliance on service providers. So we have recruited the graduates and other professionals to reduce and eliminate that reliance on service providers. So all the information now is saved there for that. The server, the what is collected, that's the Oracle database I mentioned earlier. And then, of course, then the information, it was actually transferred from that Oracle database. And using Excel, we transferred it to Artifact. So officially, the repository of our assets is actually Artifact. And my colleague will take us through that. But with your permission, PDG, and I just mentioned this, the chairperson spoke about the issue of the audit, the changes that AG, the issue that they raised, that we made changes. We had a workshop with AG, we requested a workshop, we had a workshop with them on the 18th, was it, in January. We had a workshop with AG, with the department, to just take them through the complexity of state land, and also the issue of the changes that we made, because this is the asset register of the state. I used to work for Telkom. The assets of Telkom are registered in the name of Telkom. There is no uncovered land. There is no state domestic facilities that are built on private land or tribal land, etc. But with the asset register of the state, it's different. For instance, we are a default custodian. So on the deemed list, for instance, we had about 3,000 members on the deemed list. We had to work on this list together with other national and provincial custodians, and then to identify the appropriate custodians. So we may find that just on the deemed list, maybe 400 or 500 of those land parcels belong to DPWI. So now we must now recognize them in our books in order also to comply with the legislation and also to address completeness. So there is always this movement because, like I said, because of the history or even erroneous investors, some provinces have actually, or other custodians have vested some of our land parcels incorrectly, so because the police station. So they had to, we had to engage them. So some of the land parcels, they are not necessarily addition or new addition. They were erroneously vested by the provinces because it's a police station, it's a magistrate court, etc. So we have to take those things into account because we are building a credible asset register. So those changes, we explain to AG that those changes are justifiable. The good news is that Chairperson, we submitted AG audited the restatement. We prepared a detailed reconciliation even in July, but AG, because of time, was not able to audit that. We submitted the detailed reconciliation and supporting schedule. During the interim, we got a report. So the misstatement, that opening balance that you spoke about, of 129 billion, they audited all the schedules and confirmed that the changes that we made were justifiable. But they reduced the misstatement from 129 billion to 1.4 billion. And the bulk of the 1.4 billion of that misstatement that is still remaining was actually SEPS project. Like I said earlier, there was an argument about the SEPS project. And in fact, it was a limitation of scope because we could not provide the invoices that they were requesting. But like I indicated earlier, even that issue of SEPS has been resolved. So the issue of the disclaimer has actually now been resolved. The disclaimer of 2021-22 has actually been resolved with AG because it was a technical disclaimer in the sense that it was not a qualification on management accession. Even the findings that AG raised during June and July 2022. It was, there's not a finding on completeness, neither existence, writing obligation, or omission. But the issue was that we made changes such that the opening balance changed. But we said those changes that we made were justifiable. And we actually submitted that information. They have confirmed. So now AG is now looking at the new asset register and supporting schedules that we submitted on the 31st of May 2023. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to hand over to Mongi Simelani, who's going to do a live demo and then we will ask the Register on Hakiba.
Greetings, Chairperson. Greetings, Deputy Minister. Greetings, Acting DG, and greetings to the honorable members of the committee. As explained, I'm not sure why I'm looking so funny. All right, I guess we're going to work with what we have. Again, greetings, and as explained by BDG, I am Mongi Simelane, and I am the system specialist when it comes to the Akibus system. As we know, this is a complete ERP system which allows access to different members of the department to have access to different modules within the Akibus system. So this is what it looks like from the landing page. Akibus is a web central base, meaning that it can be accessed anywhere that you have internet connection. But this is a big but. You need to have credentials in order to access it. So for me, I have VPN, meaning that I can actually access this particular the software online, so I'm able to access this from here. So I'm just going to take you through. I'm first starting with there's two different environments that we have. The first one is the training environment or the testing environment. This is the one that I'm going to start off with because I just don't want to be messing with the lagging information. So therefore, we've got, as the minister said, credible information. I don't want to be messing with the live system as yet. So as we go in, Mongi Simelane, then I have my credentials. And this is basically working off of Active Directory, meaning that as ICT, if you are a employee of the Department of Public Works, you will have access to the system. But of course, you need to apply for it, and you are given different roles within Akibus itself. Okay, this is what we call the landing page. It's not even there. Okay, there we go. I have to minimize it and make it so on and so forth. I don't know why it's so squished. This is what we call the landing page. So from here, like you see, works for you here. This is what we call the process viewer. And if I minimize it a little bit, right here you have your menus. I know it's a bit intimidating, but these are the different modules within Akibus that we can go through. But the one we're going to be concentrating on is the IAR, which is the assets. And this is the asset management, which is this module right here. Once I click into that, you have a whole bunch of what we call processes or roles. Because I'm a system administrator, I have view of everything. But this is streamlined to a sense that if I was working in the IR module, I would only have access to particular roles or particular processes within the Akibus system that I can only see depending on what my role is within the IL module. So how it works is that the process flow, as Mr. Fugela has already explained, to put the data within Archibus itself, there's two ways of doing it. One is the bulk upload, which is the migration that happened in 2019 when we were going live. That is getting all that information that they have and putting it onto the system itself. Then there's also a manual process. The manual process is a bit much slower, but that is not an issue whatsoever. The manual process is when each and every asset is put in one by one, right? And this is segregated within the different regions within the Department of Public Works. There are three individuals that are involved in this process or this work cycle. You have the capturer, which is the admin person who's going to go ahead and put in the information into the system. You have your verifier, which is a second set of eyes to verify that this information that has been input in the system is correct. And then you have your approver. Your approver's role is generally given to colleagues or individuals within the head office. So they are the last set of eyes, I would say, that would actually approve the addition of a new asset within the system itself. I'm just going to scroll down and just go into the immovable asset acquisition. That is the very, very, very first step, or the capturer will be putting in that information. Once I click there, again, we have tasks. There's different tasks, yeah. I don't want to go too deep into it, but what the capturer goes into, they go into manage asset acquisition. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go ahead and make this bigger so we can see. Sorry, I'm just trying to work it out so that we can see it properly. Apologies. I think this is much better. Is everyone happy with this? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So, as you see at the very top, there are two tasks, which is the acquire new asset and the acquire new facility. Acquire new asset is adding one asset at a time. Acquire new facility is just the grouping of different assets into one particular facility. For example, we could have, I guess, this facility that we have here, right? Within this facility, we have land, we have the improvements or the building, we have infrastructure, and then we have components. So I'm going to go and click right here. So this is the individual addition of assets. We have the acquire land, acquire improvements, which is buildings, acquire infrastructure, and we have the acquire components. As Mrs. Fugela already explained, is that the component is very, very important as how Archibus works at this point in time. IAR data is very, very important. It is basically the backbone of the Archibus system. Data is very, very important in order for all the modules to work together and sync in a very reliable way and also a credible way, so we know exactly where the asset is, whether it's a component, whether it's an improvement, and whether it's a land. So, for example, the facility management, which I'll go into just a little bit later, just to show you how the IAR information is important, works off of the asset information that is put into the system itself. Then we have the acquire facility. The acquire new facility has two stages. If it's a facility, we have to have land. So the very, very first thing that the capturer would do is put in the new land, which is acquire new land. Once this is selected, I'm just going to make this bigger. Once this is selected, this form will come up. And one thing that I really, really like about Archibus, sorry I'm a bit biased, is that there is a timestamp. There is a history of these particular assets that we are adding onto the system itself. If I scroll all the way down, you notice that there's a change history. The change history is a form of tracking what is happening or happened to this particular asset. Right now, because I'm acquiring a new land, I'll know at what date it was created, what time it was created, and by who it was created. You notice right now that it's blank. It's blank because I have not created anything as yet. Then after that, as I explained before, you have your verify, we're going to verify it. Again, we'll have a date for that, we'll have a time it was verified, and who the user was who verified it. Then, the last step to make this transaction, because right now it's a transaction, it only becomes an asset once it has been approved. So right now, before it's approved, it will get a transaction code. Then after that, it will have a asset code when it's been approved. After that, we have your approver information as well. You have the date it was approved, the time it was approved, and also by who or by whom it was approved. Again, this speaks to Deputy Minister's point on credibility. We need to know exactly who is facilitating it and how it happens. I don't really want to go into all these fields.
Yes, exactly.
So I don't want to go all into this as well, but it's going to take a long time. But again, all the fields that Mr. Sogela had explained as well, we have the location information that we have here, we have size, we have the description, which lets us know the intended use of the asset and also the current use, the ownership, and of course the deed information. And one piece of information that I want to emphasize as well is that the capturer needs to have some sort of POV. It's, the capturer is not going to be adding this information off the top of their head. There has to be some sort of POE that they are referring to, some sort of documentation that they're referring to, and also within Archibus itself, they can upload that particular POE that they were working on, which would assist the verifier and the approver to know that this information is correct.
Chair, through you, once you are in the system, am I able to give you a town and an earth number and do a test?
You are able to give me a town and an earth number, yes.
Chair?
Can we allow the presentation to finish a little bit?
Sure,
so I want to ask all these questions.
Sure.
Okay. So that is just basically the first step. So that's basically the first step. Then we have the verify and approval. Okay? So then...
Chair, I wanted to propose that maybe allow Honorable Hedlin just to test the system, because when he's done presenting, then it will be closed and it will be cumbersome to go back. Just as a suggestion, Chair. It's up to you, Chair.
The challenge is that some of us want to focus. If we are going to do that, like now I have to think what is the site number of this address that is in the phone book that I know of. That number and all those things, can that system pick it?
Okay. Understood, Chair.
I really don't think it's fair.
Okay. Understood, Chair. Thank you.
No, I don't think it's fair. Because the other members, what are we expecting from them? It's good that we are demonstrating, but what is supposed to be done, sorry, I didn't take your number, Mongine, your name, sorry. I think after Mongi has shown us all this, then Mongi must pick up himself a property, maybe that is here in Cape Town, that is already in the system, and so on. Which is what Honorable Dickie was trying to say. That is, okay, for example, there is this property, the museum, for example, I'm just taking an example, but you can pick any other property, not the one that is just known. On this system, how then do we check it? How then do a property that has been disposed, all that is telling us.
Thank you so much,
Chairperson.
So that is basically what I wanted to show you on the test environment. Okay. So now I'm going to go into the live environment, and I think which is very, very important, and one thing that the honourable members are looking forward to is the report, the reporting. This is where I'm going to address your question as well. I'm going to go in and log in. Right here. Then I go to asset management. I scroll down. Then I go to asset report. Or for the executive, I can just go to the executive report here. So within the executive, this is a role that you'll be given as an executive. You're not necessarily dabbling in and going into working on the system itself. Maybe you just want to see a particular property. Maybe you want to see exactly where it is and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to the asset dashboard. So this dashboard basically shows you different aspects of the IR assets or the IR information. The very, very first one is the total amount of, let's say, the IR assets, which are components, improvements, infrastructure, and land. If I would click here, this is very small, I need to make it bigger. If I click here, this would come up. I just make it a bit smaller here so you guys can see it. This is a dashboard of all the information. How it works is that I can export this information onto an Excel spreadsheet where I can further investigate the information and so on. So if I click right there on the Excel S button, you notice at the very, very bottom, I have an extract of that land information that I'm looking for. If I click there, sorry, it's about to open up. I will therefore get a download of the land information that I'm looking for in a Excel spreadsheet, which we see right here. So that is basically the dashboard information here when it comes to the total IR asset. Then we have the land that's unutilized, that is closed. We have the vacant versus improvement. Then we have the asset count per region. And then we have the different classifications of the the assets that we have here. Again, all these numbers are clickable. So we can go in and click on that, and then this will come up. Then we can export that information into an Excel spreadsheet. Remember, Arquebus is the central repository for all this information. But it is digitized, but yet we can export that information as well. Then the next one we have, this report that I want to go into, is the immovable asset view. This right here is the, sorry guys, I have to play around with it. This right here is the view of all the assets that are within the Archiva system. This right here at the very top is what we have a filter. So we can filter for an asset code, we can filter for a town, we can filter for the status, we can filter for the LPI code, and so on. So for example, I'm going to go ahead here and filter for Cape Town. I'm not sure where. I just pick a random one. I go here, click the show button, and you notice that it all changed now to Cape Town. Particularly this town. And I can further drill down and go into this particular asset here by clicking on the view button. This is going to give me further detail into this particular asset itself. This is where I have the identification, I've got the size, the ownership, the rate, the location, and so on. And not just that, it also will give me the linked asset to this particular asset here. So this is a vacant land, and it has a infrastructure that is linked to it in particular. So that is just some of the reports that the IIR module has in that regard. There's plenty of reports. I don't even want to go into them right now, but there's a lot more reports that not even that are here standards, but also as ICT we can accommodate the business by editing or adding a particular report that they're looking for. And one thing that I just wanted to touch on as well is the maintenance as well, the FM module. If I go into, this is a different module in its own. It's called Building Operations, On-Demand Work. Again, a lot of information that is here. Here's your dashboard report. It's different reports that they have here. In particular, I want to look at the work request extract. Work request extract is a report that's just letting us know all of the facility management work that has been done. And I can also, therefore, go in and filter specifically for a particular facility. And by filtering for a specific facility, I can see the entire history of all the work that has been done in that particular facility. This is why the IR module is so important. Again, sorry, I'm going to be saying that quite a number of times, to know that, okay, this is all the work that is being done. I'm going to go ahead and let me pick one in Cape Town. I'll go ahead and show. This, as you see, has filtered now for this particular facility. If I scroll all the way to the right, you'll notice that the facility code is the same. The facility name is the same. So we see the entire history of all the work done in this particular facility. And again, we can extract that information using the XLS button, which then will download, because I'm using Chrome, it will download it automatically for me over here. And once I click on that, it's going to open it up, and I thereafter have an entire spreadsheet of all the work that has been done in this particular facility. So, honorable members, that is just basically an overview of the capabilities of Archibus. not to go too deep into it, but that's basically what Acubus is capable of, and the information is readily available if you've got access to it, and there's different reports that that you have access to as well. Again, certain reports can be tweaked as well, because with ICT we can cater to business. If they're looking for anything in particular, we can make a report for them in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mongi. Honorable Chairperson and members, we've also got the GIS presentation that will show the linkages to the IAR, but I'm not sure if you want to have anything specific for Mongi to look at.
Well, I was just going to give one Earth number in to see if we could grab it, Chair. If you were willing.
Is it a...
It's just an Earth number that I know is there on form. I have no idea what it is. Why don't I paint the thing?
Is this a government property?
Yes, it is a DPWI property.
Are we through with the presentation? Not necessarily this one?
No, Chairperson, we've got the GIS presentation that's linked to this.
Okay. Members, yeah, I think to me, let's deal with the presentation because we're still going to engage and we are expected to be also at the house this afternoon. I think you all know that we will be dealing with directly with the department itself because we also have some questions that we are going to ask. Then what can be done is that whilst we are still why was getting some presentation, Honorable Kiplin, you just forward the name of this app to Mongi. Then Mongi will look at it, and then when we are through, then Mongi will show us on the screen.
Okay, great stuff.
Yeah. Can we then
please how does she forward? Does she have the to communicate with you?
I take it from there.
Thank you. I'll hand over to Lebo Modibo.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Lebo Modibo. I'm one of the GIS professionals at the Department of Public Works within the Real Estate Registry Unit. I'm going to be talking to slide 28, our desktop analysis process, explaining what is GIS exactly. GIS is a tool that is designed to allow us to map the world features in a layer format and be able to visualize it on the ground. So we, on our daily basis as GIS professionals within the department, we work on making sure that the asset register is represented on the ground. The screen is a bit faded. Firstly, based on our assets, when we own it, we need to also have a background as the GIS professionals. We need to know who owns the property. So, for example, I'm going to give an example of the property that I have that is owned by the Department of Public Works. It's 6407. That is in Warsaw Bay. So, as a GIS professional, I need to be able to know land information so that I can represent it on the ground. So we are not the custodian of the spatial information of the land. Therefore, we rely on the Chief Surveyor General to give us the spatial information based on the properties that we own. So when we do our analysis, we filter from their data from the whole of South Africa what we own, and we map that. From there, we put in the footprint. So I'm just quickly going to take you through that. What I have here, it's very dark. It's our GIS system. This is not the live system that we use in our unit. This is just a GIS desktop that anyone can use. The one that we have at the office, currently we cannot access it because it's still within the walls of DPW. We cannot connect to it via VPN or anything. So it also has segregation of duties. We have data capturers, we have verifiers, and then we also have the approvers to approve the information after it's thrown on the ground. I'm not sure what I want to show you here is going to show because it's very dark. Can't we adjust the projector somehow? Can we adjust the projector a bit to make it a bit light? Which connection? Okay, let's try to get the connection because are we able to see? Yeah, so that is the demarcation of that F number 6407 in Mozal Bay. So we get information from Chief Surveyor General. We only pull the demarcations that belong to us and map them and import them into our system. So after we do that, we do a heads-up digitization, which it means that I, as a professional, will take my mouse and draw over the buildings to create a building footprint. The system that we use in-house, the GIS one, immediately when I draw the building footprint, it will actually generate an ID that is systematic, that is unique, and then it's kept in the Oracle. So now that I'm just showing you is not within our system, whatever I'm going to draw is not going to have an ID. We're just going to pull the sample some of that building. And by the way, this is what is a police station. What is the name of the police station? Gamma Op police station. And then as part of heads-up digitizing, this is the process that I'll do. I'll just go click there. Maybe it's not visible, but can you see? So that is heads-up digitizing. We don't use computers to draw our buildings, so we physically draw all the buildings ourselves as the GIS professionals. And then when I'm done, because this is not the current system, it was going to generate its own building ID, then I'll give it building ID. So it's going to show the, I'm just going to try to show them a different color. You see, now the building is there. So we do all of that. So we call that our building footprint. So that's how we represent all our buildings that are in the asset register with a unique ID. And then we are able to link it to the land that is sitting on, on a LPR code and also on a site ID. So, and then from there, after we are done in the segregation of duties, this is what is done by the capturer. After the capturer is finished drawing the building footprint, and then they will pass it to the second phase. And then what they will do, they will check if the buildings are properly digitized. And then from there, the approver, when they push this information, they will now approve it now to go to fiscal verification process. So the digitalized IAR is the one that drives also our fiscal verification. We are able now to use that small polygon or that small square to go and physically verify and attach all information that is in the field. What is the place? What is the name? Then all the street numbers, the condition, and even take pictures so that when you open the system, immediately when you click on that small polygon, all the information from the GIS desktop to fiscal verification is actually attached to that information, and it's actually sitting in the Oracle database. So I think from that is all, that is what we do, desktop analysis in the GIS. I'll hand over to my colleague where she's going to show you the overview of the asset register, where it's all digitalized. You can see all the land and all the buildings in the immovable asset register. Thank you.
Thank you, Lebo. I'm Chairperson under my members. I'll hand over to Luna.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Luna Kolva, and I'm also one of the GIS professionals within the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take you through now the specially referenced immovable asset register within our department. It's just a disadvantage for us that we cannot really see clearly on the projector what is happening. But as my seniors have already explained the numbers of what we have in terms of the IAR for the land parcels, of which us we refer to them as sites. So if I use those terms interchangeably, you must know that if I say sites, I'm referring to the land parcels. And also the total numbers of the buildings. So this is what you see now on the map, the spatial reference immovable asset register, your land and the buildings. So I'm sorry that you cannot see my full screen, but I think the most important part is the map on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Just to check, is this the same map that we have in the presentation, the one that is the index? Because I think it's more clear. I understand that Mungi's presentation, we looked at it because that one it needs whatever to get it with. Slide 50 and slide 29.
It's different.
It's not
okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So now, the numbers that you see on the screen, what is mapped on the map, throughout South Africa. And now on your legend, on your left, we can see that we've got a purple color, which is representing or depicts the land parcels that we have throughout South Africa. And then the yellow, which we cannot really see on the screen, a yellow polygon, we can see that they represent all our buildings throughout the country. Now, as GIS, as my colleague has already alluded to, we represent spatial information either using a polygon, point, or line. Now, in our situation, we use polygons to represent both the land and the building. Now, what you see here is a dashboard. This is a platform, a GIS platform, that we are using to share the information or to analyze and just give a quick overview into what is mapped on the ground. So now, if we were to go, you can see we've got a few of the widgets there that you can use to quickly get into the information that you need that is on the map. For example, if we wanted to search the building or a building of interest, I can just pick any here, and then if I click on that building, and then it will zoom into that building of interest on the screen. And then also, if I were to zoom into a particular land parcel of interest, I click and also the map will zoom into that particular land parcel. So this platform allows you to get information quickly at a glance if you wanted to get access or view what is happening on the ground related to our asset register. And now also, you can also use a search button. You see that. And then you can just click there. This one, you can use it just like you use your normal Google Maps on your phone. You know, when you're traveling to a certain area that you don't know, you can just put an address, and then it will give you that area or the where you are going. So here, because you are in Cape Town, I will just search for an asset that is in Cape Town. Okay, so when you start typing, it will start giving you examples of what you can pick. I will just click on this one, Bellevue Central. And then our map should show. Okay, I will just, because this is live and we are using internet to connect, I will just refresh a bit so that our buildings and land parcels that are within that area that I'm zoomed into, they can just come up. Okay. Now it's starting to respond. Okay, sometimes if we don't have enough network coverage, it does take some time because the amount of the information that is in the system is quite a lot. When you combine together the land and the building, it's quite heavy. Okay, but it's coming. Okay. We're just going to attempt that search again. There we go. So we can see here that in Bellevue, we've got those assets. And because it's special information, the beauty of special information is that you can superimpose other layers. We've got the IAR, the buildings and the land, but you can put other layers that you can use to actually analyze the information in relation to other information that is on the ground. So here we have put the police station. That emblem there, which is blue, is the police station. So just for us to see what is really happening there, we can see, we can just zoom in, and then we can see what is happening. This is a Bellevue police station, and if you click in one of these, it's going to give you the information that is related to what you are querying on the ground. Okay, I'm just going to open that up. Okay, so we can see the purple one, which is the land parcel. If you click in it, it will give you the information. It will tell you it's an improved land parcel, and it will also give you all the other information that is related to that land parcel. For example, it will give you the property description, which tells you it's the remainder of F10850 in Belleville. And also we can see that it's a police station. All right. Then I'm going to move and then also show you, I only have 5 slides that I'm going to show you. And then here, on this slide, it does show you how we can get information from the IAR in relation to the ground. So we've got here the top 5 user departments from the IAR. As you can see here, we've got a legend. So those colors on the legend that you see on your left, they represent those top 5 departments. There you can see the red, and note the correctional services buildings. You can see the blue is the buildings from defense and so forth. Now here you've got a bar graph that tells you the numbers in relation to what you see on that map. So here we can see that the defense is the biggest user, as you can see there on the graph. So that's how easy you can just interpret the information using the GIS so that you can make a meaningful or informed decision. Mm-hmm. So we can see all those different colors that are depicted, and they are here, they are mapped on the ground, which is you can actually have an overview of what is happening in the whole of South Africa in terms of who is the top user of the IAR. And then the next slide, here we are showing what we have been telling you in terms of now, once you have captured these assets using the GIS, the land and the building, and we've got a team that specializes in physical verification that go on the ground and actually verify. One of the things that we verify is the condition of these assets, to say that a building is excellent in terms of the condition, it's good, or it's very, or it's poor. So now, once the team goes to the field, they also take pictures of those physically verified assets. And one of these are the examples of the pictures. When we say a building is excellent, what do we mean? So when we say a building is excellent in condition, it's just that you can't see. So now we can see the excellent building, and also we can see the type of building that when we say it's poor or fair, what type of condition are we relating to when we say a building is very poor, meaning that the information that is physically verified is linked back to the GIS that we can map on the ground using a building ID or using a site ID. Okay, and now in terms of the of our buildings now in the IAR, we can see that the green there represent all the buildings that are fair, and mostly shows you by just looking at the graph that most of our buildings are in a fair condition, and most our buildings, which is that purple color there, are in a good condition. And then we also have buildings that are in a very poor condition, as you can see there, that yellow bar there in the background. Okay, now this slide shows to you, honorable members, the spatial spread of our land in terms of 2 categories, the land parcels that are improved and the land parcels that are vacant. So any land parcel, when we say it's improved, it means that it has buildings on it. And then the vacant land parcel, it means there's nothing. There are no improvements on the ground. It's just a vacant land parcel. So now by just looking at that map, we can see that on that legend there, that all the land parcels that you see on the map, which are represented by that orange-like color, is land parcels that are improved, and all the land parcels that are represented by that brown color is land parcels that are vacant. Also, the pie chart there gives you at least a nice overview at a glance to see how much of our land parcels are vacant, which is 34%, and also how much of our land parcels are improved. We also have here below a graph that tells us the statistics now in terms of the provinces, to say that, for example, in KwaZulu-Natal province, that is where we've got most of our improved and also most of our vacant land parcels, and also followed by the Western Cape in terms of the amount of improved land parcels. So both of these, they talk to what you can specially see on the map there in the whole of South Africa. So at a glance, you can just see what is really happening in terms of the IAR, the Immovable Asset Register. And then, yes, the last slide that we have, it tells us now in terms of the occupancy of our buildings. We can see that just looking at the graph, at the legend there on the left, that we've got utilized and unutilized facilities, and also looking at the pie chart, they give us an overview representation that 2% of our buildings, they are unutilized, whereas 98% of our buildings are utilized. I will stop there, Honorable Member, thank you so much. But just to add, to say that it is not only limited to what we are showing you, these are the examples of what we can do, because our IAR is specially referenced. So we can do many other analysis that can answer many questions using this specially referenced Immovable Asset Register. Thank you so much.
Jefferson, thank you. We hand over back to you. We will email the slides of the GIS so that you can have a clearer vision of it. Yeah. And the previous one by Umongi. Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you. The lights. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this presentation. Maybe, I think you are true, but in terms of the slides, or maybe this information that is here is covered in the information that has been presented, the one that is here.
Chairperson, thank you. Yes, we've provided more details on it. So we zoomed into the details. This is specially represented right across the country, and we provided more detail on it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Honorable members, yeah, some notes that I wrote. Okay. Honorable members, I then invite you to voice questions, comments on the information that we have just received. I will start right there. Honorable Van Staden, followed by Honorable Mashebe, Honorable Suisa, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Matebula, Honorable Fantwati. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm so glad that this matter is on the table today. This is a matter which was shown over here. I just have a few questions. It's not much. I just want to know, is all our state assets now on the system captured, every single immovable asset that the state is having? And was the honourable gentleman speaking about the capturers and the people working on the system? Do we have enough people working on the system? I'm just afraid if it's not enough, then they can be overwhelmed at the stage and then the thing starts with bottlenecking and then we have a problem again. And which was the other one now? I completely forgot. Everything we actually own is identified now, or are we still property which came from the previous government, as I understand, which is not still yet identified? If you can just give me that information, please. And how are we going to resolve, if it is, how are we going to resolve that problem? Thank you.
Thank you,
Honourable
Mashebe. Just before you put in Honourable Sikala.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation, colleagues. As Honorable Fastarin has said, it has been a long overdue presentation indeed. Chairperson, I'm not particularly having any issues with the system. Of course, there are challenges, as the colleagues have indicated here and there. I've got a problem with the current state of DPWI asset properties, land. For me, these are low-hanging fruits that I think that the department should be obsessed about. The department should be obsessed about properties where private individuals, residents in particular, who are affected by the ongoing illegal invasions of these properties, the deterioration of these properties, and the crime escalation by these particular properties. Because there are private individuals who have said to DPWI, and they've made submissions, can we take these properties off your hands? Can we lease them? Can we purchase them? What kind of agreement can we come into? Because they're having a negative impact in terms of us as a community. We have situations where DPWI land has been illegally invaded, and is contributing to informal settlements. And I think I've said this in our chat last week. And these are issues that are well known, these are well documented, these are well communicated with DPWI, and I've said, and I want to emphasize, they are low-hanging fruits that the department should be obsessed about. And whilst we note the presentation and as far as where these properties are, we know that there are some properties that obviously have not yet been identified or listed as RSA, Republic of South Africa land, as the presentation, which is unclaimed assets or deemed something, the word that you used. But there are communication from municipalities to DPWI about such land. What happens, because they're part of your stakeholders, what is the relationship between the department and such municipalities who are saying, look, your properties, your assets, are contributing to an unsustainable function. And as far as our core mandate is concerned in terms of service delivery, we are unable to provide services to this particular land because people have illegally invaded this particular land. This has created a problem in terms of the Human Rights Commission, who have said that we must now provide services to this particular resident in that particular illegally occupied land. I mean, the example that we all know here, and I'm sure the colleagues in DPWI know, what happened in Fiva Skrif local municipality in Kunofokstraat. And that is one aspect of what happens when people illegally occupy DPWI property, where opportunities are lost in terms of job opportunities and where people are far removed from services, etc. So these are issues that I believe are fundamental and should be addressed by DPWI as a matter of urgency. In Waterloo Green, where people have said, look, these are properties, these are historical properties that have been left to deteriorate over the past 10 years, the schools there have said, we want to come through, we want to come in, we are in need of parking, we are in need of recreational facilities. Since 2020, we've made a submission, we've made an application, DPWI is not forthcoming. These are issues that I believe, in my view, the department should be obsessed about and should really, really be working in collaboration with municipalities to really be able to deal with these issues, because they are creating a problem. And I'm pretty sure that we know where these buildings are, where these properties are, where these assets are. And the fact that we are not maintaining them, the fact that we are allowing them to deteriorate to an extent where they are creating havoc in terms of the levels of crime, is an indictment on the department and really speaks a lot about how effective and efficient we are in terms of nipping these things in the bud before they escalate and get out of control. And I think that's for me, Chair, is my submission as far as that is concerned. And I do think that it's something that the department needs to look at here, as far as just dealing with some of these smaller issues, especially when we work with local municipalities as institutions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mashele.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to yourself, my colleagues that I've not seen in a long time, DM and your entire team. Let me raise two questions, Chair. I just want to check if the department has the entire land and building in the system, and let the response come in terms of percentages. If indeed we have, if it's 100%, it's fine. If not, what is the percentage? What is it that is in, and what is it that they think is not in? In terms of the system, occupants. Who owns the data? Is the data with you or is with the service provider? Probably to expand, I claim that I own this iPhone, and probably I just own this hardware. Everything that is here is not even here in Africa. It's hosted somewhere, and that person who the real owner is the one who owns this data, because the day one he'll decide that I must not access, I'll not access it. So where does this data reside? It's with you or it's with the service provider somewhere? Maybe the last one, Chair. On slide 25, the presentation tells us that you appointed secondary service providers to conduct verification and condition assessment. Is that still the case? Do you still rely on other people outside the employment of the department, or you do have, or you have built in-house capacity to do these physical verifications? Let me stop there, Chair, for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone. Chairperson, I think anybody, when they start to embark on any project, they make sure that everything is in place. I'm raising this with a reference to the 53 million that was spent to start this process of asset register and everything, taking into consideration the standing point of the EFF is very clear that everything must come to the state, irrespective if it's private or not. So any person who embarks on a project, make sure that everything is in place, because if the department was well planned, then it wouldn't be necessary to go and look for, to outsource the verification. And you, because you are paying people to do your own work, which is work that you are supposed to be having this information within your database, and you go out and spend 53 million to start a process of, you should have known what's in your asset, what do you have there. So that's my first concern. And then my second one is, I think some of the questions were answered in between the presentation that was done. When you speak about complying, you're saying it's compliant. What do you mean when you say it's compliant? What do you mean when you say the land parcel or the site has been verified? This is our, what are the documents that you're actually looking for? Because at present we know that there are a lot of buildings that are being occupied. Some are for good reasons, some are for bad reasons. We've got, you've got properties that are dilapidated, that have become a hub for criminal activities. That the department is not doing anything about that. So when you say you verified, because one of my colleagues in one of the meetings, who was sitting in correctional, he raised an issue of houses that are being occupied in Tshwane, and people are staying there. And you say that, and there's no, it's not only that property. There are other properties that you even can't verify that whether they are yours or they belong to somebody else. So when you say it's verified, you are concrete, you are content, you are sure that this does not belong to us, it belongs to somebody else. What are you actually looking at? Yes, the system is beautiful. If everything belonged to you from Eastern Cape to Western Cape, everywhere else, we wouldn't be needing a register and to verify whether this belongs to owner A or B. Number two, consequence management. What happens if you find that one of your verifiers or one of your officials or one of your staff members has actually made a mistake to load up property that does not actually belong to the department? What are the consequence management that is put in place? And in one of the presentations of, hey, I'm not good at this, of the kind, so that it says that it's either it's approved or rejected. If it's rejected, what are the following steps that are going to be taken? I was going to ask, and DM, according to, maybe we'll get the presentation, as it has been said, of the GIS, KZN most improved and also vacant. I'm very passionate about KZN these days. Most improved and most vacant. And we are still having the issue of the flood victims of KZN and their vacant land. What is being done about that to make sure that those people of KZN are going to be? And is the system giving us value for money? That's another thing that we need to look into. Are we going to get value for money, or are we going to come and sit in the 7th Parliament and we get a very different report? Or are we, whoever is coming in, they are going to get an improved report, and not to say these are the hiccups Because each and everything that we do, we need to have consequence management. We need to have a backup plan that if the system fails, what is it that we are going to do? And none out of all the presentations that have been said, there's nowhere where it's mentioned that if the system crashes, this is what we are going to do. If we find that one of our employees or one of the people at a later stage from 2011 to 2013, we outsourced for verification. In 2020, we get a lawsuit that says, actually, the property belongs to Ms. AMC, and you guys have registered it. Nobody has spoken about consequence management if there are any mistakes that are being done. And we all know that if it goes there, it puts in legal, and then it means that money is going to be spent. We should be at the stage where we say we are saving, not spending. And none of the presentation speaks about what happens if something goes wrong. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker.
Thank you so much, Chair. If you look at this presentation, you would say that we lived in utopia, that the system works perfectly, and the discussions that we have on a daily basis about an immovable asset register and the concerns that we have are really just people creating problems where problems don't exist. So I cautiously welcome this presentation, and I really do need to use the word cautiously. It appears on your systems to really flow very well, but we do know that only 3 out of the 8 modules have been implemented. I have had a discussion with the DDG and with Ms. Subban about whether there are potential solutions out there that will make Archibus work better. And because I believe there are problems, and we can't walk away from those problems. I'm not a software engineer, and I do not profess to be. I think that the biggest problem that currently exists is I don't believe there is sufficient expertise within the DPWI to solve the ERP problems that Archibus is throwing at the department. Not from lack of trying. I'm emphasizing that it's not from lack of trying, and I'm acknowledging that. So please understand I'm not saying that you haven't tried. I am saying to you, somewhere along the line, I don't know whether the correct skills do not exist within the DPWI, or to address the problems, or what the issue is. And where the alarm bells came ringing from me was in last week's presentation, where a comment was made that Deloitte was released due to underperformance. Now, Deloitte is one of the most respected companies in the world, and I can't understand how an institution like Deloitte could be released due to underperformance. And I made the statement last week, and I'll make it again today. When one starts altering the source code of a software program, one is going to get to a point where the original manufacturers of that program are going to cease to be able to offer support, because that program has been bastardized to the extent that no support can be offered. I've given the DDG and Ms. Subban an undertaking that I will get in touch with people who I know in Johannesburg who may be able to offer some solutions. And I will ask them to speak directly to the DDG and to Ms. Subban, because as I said, it's not I have no idea. I don't know ERP software at all. I don't know software. But there has to be some solution that will facilitate that more than 3 out of the 8 modules get implemented so that the system moves more freely. The IRF numbers that I gave you are just a list that was presented to me by one of the councillors in Merafong. There is a whole page that was supplied to her of National Public Works IRVN that they want answers on in Merafong and surrounding areas. That was supplied to them by the National Department of Public Works. I have no idea if these IRVN actually exist or what they are or what is on them. Which is why I said to you, can we have a look? This was supplied to them through the national department down to the provincial department because they were querying some vacant lots in Merafong that were creating problems with land invasions and with vagrants and that were not being maintained. And this was being passed on by the provincial department, saying this is not ours, we are not going to take responsibility for it. And it's a lack of communication between the National Department of Public Works and the Provincial Department of Public Works. And how do we get those two spheres of government to actually work together? And that is what the IAR has to do ultimately. We have to have one repository of information. That whether I'm speaking to a person at NDPWI or whether it's National Department of Public Works or Provincial Department of Public Works, they can put their finger on a button or get hold of you or get hold of a Ms. Suvan and say, is this a DPWI piece of land? And you can say, yes, it's provincial or no, it's national or whatever the story is. And I don't believe that we're actually at that point. And until we are at that point as a department, we cannot stand up with our hands on our hearts and say we have a handle on our immovable asset register. And I think that's where the problem comes in. So I say to you, I appreciate the presentation with reservations because I don't believe we're anywhere near being able to reconcile provincial and national. And until that happens, we can't say that the Department of Public Works has an accurate movable asset register. And right now, we've spent 53 million. There's 50 million that's in the offing, and the DDG mentioned a total. If we're going to integrate anything, the amount is sitting at an anticipated 200 million. It's a lot of money for a software solution that I'm not sure is the right one. I don't know that I have an alternative. I've offered to try and see if people that I know in the ERP area can offer you a solution. So I will make that happen, but that's my contribution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Members of this committee and the department. Well, Chair, I just have a few things to raise here. First of all, let me start by congratulating the department for the work well done. I picked up from the report that you have recruited a graduate to assist in carrying out some of your work in the department, which is a good thing. It's part of our manifesto, the African National Congress and this democratic government, to ensure that our people benefit from the leadership of the African National Congress in this government by creating job opportunities. So it's a good thing, and given the fact that we've got so many graduates who are graduating every year in this country. Chair, coming to my following points, Well, Chair, I'm not surprised by the findings by the SG, the AG. Since we came into Parliament, be part of this committee, we've been struggling to get the issue of the asset register right. So I'm not surprised. And what is shocking me from what you said, Chair, is that something simple was not complied with. That what the department ended with when they submitted their asset register, they did not start with when they submitted their new asset register. A very simple thing to actually do, and something that I believe with the experienced officials that we have in the department should not have been a problem. And I also listened to the Deputy Minister and saying that we've been calling for the asset register of movable property. But from what I get from her, I'm not so sure if the Deputy Minister were able to get that information. But I also need to also at the same time commend you, because I see that you have moved from what you were when we came in here in 2019, that things are getting somehow better, even though they are not where we expect them to be as this committee. Chair, I just want to also check this. There was an indication here that you have 54% of the current immovable has been in terms of the assets. Now, then 66 assets that are immovable, 66%. Now, is it possible, or can you break it down as per the provinces? Your 34% of vacant land and 66% of the land that is not vacant, which has got properties on it. And I also want to check here, was this clarity that I need to be clarified on. You say that you've got 98% of utilized land and 2% which is not utilized. And there's 34% of vacant land. So I just want to check, when you speak vacant land, are you speaking vacant land that are such land there is no activity taking place? And then you also speak of 2% of unutilized land. How do you balance the two? And lastly, can one clarify me on the issue of fair condition, good condition, poor condition, as to what exactly do you mean by these conditions? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matebula. Honourable Francis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings, Honourable Chairperson, DM and the team, Honourable Members, and staff present this morning. Chairperson, I the privilege of being last is that you don't have to engage that much because majority of the areas have been covered. So, Chair, I want to start at the beginning with regards to the input of the Deputy Minister, when she referred to the ideal of a credible IAR. And I think that's exactly what we need, because it is important not to have a quantitative system, but a qualitative system. And everything that has been done throughout the years finally led us to this moment where we are able to gather in this meeting and receive such a briefing, and I really want to welcome the presentation that has been made and the efforts in trying to show us how far we really came for this number of years after a lot of resources has been put into the system, and finally we can see some kind of results, even though we are not there where we want to be. But I really think we need to acknowledge the progress that has been made. So, Chairperson, firstly, I want to welcome the issue of the fact that the service providers have been outsourced and the recruitment of graduates and relevant staff to reduce reliance on service providers as in line with the AG recommendation. So, which brings me to the issue of all, we know there's a lot of issues that have been raised from the AG side with regards to this area, and we need to know where are we standing now in terms of the resolving the AG issue. When we go to the next audit report, would we found 90% decrease, or what in terms of the resolve in terms of the AG issues, how far are we? Then when we talk about the people that have been employed in terms of the recruitment, can you give us an estimate of how many jobs were created and whether it's contract or permanent jobs in terms of this area? Then based on the huge access to different aspects in terms of the system, I think it's only fair for us to ask Chairperson. I've noted the what can be done by the different system administrators based on the level of requirement or requirements of what you can do, so in terms of access to the system. So it immediately might raise some red flags out there in the public domain in terms of how easy is this system manipulatable. And we know fraud and corruption can come in at any point. And if you have a system that is there, there's always an element of corruption that can take place. So my question in this regard is, all the system administrators who have access to the system, are they being vetted? And is there an element of lifestyle audits that's been done for obvious reasons, as well as the frequency thereof? Then, Chairperson, I want to know who monitors the movement from the system, and how frequent is that being done, and the role of senior management in terms of this monitoring role, if you have any. Then, Chairperson, we've long time ago been made aware of some of the properties that align to GPS coordinates. And we've been told that there's some properties where you find a GPS coordinate that can't be physically traced. So do we have such in the current conjuncture, or is there a GPS coordinates attached to each and every property, or how is that working currently? Chairperson, We've seen that in the presentation that on the condition of buildings, and I want to know, does this stipulate the date of the picture that has been taken physically, and how often is it being amended or inspected or revised to update the system on the condition of the buildings? And if the condition is inspected and it is of poor quality, do you have maintenance plans or that's linked to that condition of buildings to make sure that in the next time when the buildings are being inspected, surely based on the maintenance plans that are in place, if the condition has been improved. Then, Chairperson, I want to know how safe this system is from external influences, because we might find this thing of the system being corrupted or things like that. That brings me to the next question. If there are any problems that arise in terms of a crashing or corruption, system being corrupted, pardon me, because I'm not the IT specialist, so I might be using the wrong wording. Is there a backup system in place to secure the data? And in terms of the erroneous transfer of properties, we've been told that there's this issue of erroneous transfer of properties to other stakeholders like your provinces or your local government. Are we aware of any such or more erroneous transfers, or are you picking things up as you go on, or what is happening? Because it seems, from where are you working? Is it from a zero base and you go on as you proceed, or do you have a base where you transfer this property from manual to the system? Or just explain to me how that is working. Then, Chairperson, lastly, there's a proposal that has been made from one of the honourable members that the property should be sold to dispose of them. I have a contrary view, Chairperson, that if the department can do things right, it's a great opportunity for revenue generation, and that's why we need to see that properties that are there are being properly maintained, ensure the increase of revenue generation by leasing out the properties instead of selling them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Van Skalvik. Let me also welcome the presentation. It's really clear some gray areas that you have had. Let me start by being very controversial. Since 1994, it's 29 years now. Mm-hmm. Say, take out the 9 years. You have been trying to integrate the TPVC states and all that and all that. For example, I'm coming from Eastern Cape. You had two homelands, this guy and this guy, and then you had the, what was called then, South Africa. So take 9 years in trying to integrate that. But can we then, asking that question that has been asked by Honorable Mashele and Honorable Fasede, can you confidently stand in this meeting and say that all the government assets that belong to National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, from Transkei, from Ciskei, and from the South Africa, that is in Eastern Cape, it's in your system. I'm saying take out the 9 years, saying that the 9 years you were working in integrating all this. In these 20 years, Because one thing, it cannot be an issue that excluding UOCM, it cannot be an issue some more official that I came last year, I came last other year. The information has been there. The information has been there. But can you confidently say and say that you have done so? I'm raising this because when we came in 2019, our legacy report talked about the issue of immovable asset register of this department. Auditor General on our very first meeting in Kudlow talked about the issue of immovable asset register. And having people that have financial background, they would definitely know one thing that Auditor General doesn't miss when it's doing its work is the issue of asset register. That's one thing that Auditor General doesn't miss when it's doing its work in any institution. But till today, we have not yet captured it correctly. So I wanted to start with that thought.
Okay.
The issue of assets being erroneously captured in one, it came on that meeting that we had of Ekurhuleni Metro, city of Ekurhuleni. It came when we asked for that meeting and all that, because previously the meeting that we had in February, the department was still claiming that asset, not knowing that it has been, there has been this error. So if we're saying, remember, as much as we said, don't present the background, we have read it. And in the background, the report is saying you are still going to do this check. And as such, it will change. If I can take you to page 12 of your, it says, the land parcels under the custodianship of the BWC are complete, taking into account the recognition criteria. The total number is likely to change due to the following. Which means it has not been done. But when we were discussing the issue, you agreed that really there's been this error. So it goes to that point, how many have we really captured? A simple example where I'm coming from is the case, of course, Tata. There is a traditional leader there that is selling land, and that land belongs to public land. How he got it, there are areas that Honorable Scholar has mentioned where people are invading illegally, and most of those lands, they belong to public land. Really appreciate the explanation on the misstatement. It was black and white in the report that we discussed. So we really appreciate that you corrected that, and that it has gone down. We appreciate it. On the slide, the paper document, at least some of the issues are here. Because I was going to ask that it's a misrepresentation when we looked on the one that was here on the screen. When you say excellent, fair, good, and poor, it ought to be excellent, good, fair. Because in the graph now, as much as fair is up there, it's as if fair is following excellent. No, fair is after good. But in the slide, at least in this one, it has been shown correctly there, in the document, it's the other way around. And to me, that is a misrepresentation. It ought to be put correctly. There is an issue of utilized building and unutilized. 2%, 98%. Does this mean, for example, we have Telkom Tower. It's one of the buildings. And we know that in terms of occupation, we are not even on 50% in that building. We went there, having received good reports, having been told that the minister has moved back, the deputy minister, they have moved back into their offices. We went there. And what we saw was not what we were told. So this percentage that says the buildings that are being utilized in terms of percentage is 98%, does it also refer to a building that is utilized in terms of the total space of the building? You are utilizing 2%? I'm just asking so that we understand. If you are saying utilizing, even if one office, or maybe because there are security, there is security there, I was saying that building is utilized. So what exactly do we mean when we say 98% of all the buildings are being utilized? So I really wanted to understand that. I've seen the organogram, if it is an organogram, or in terms of who is where, how many people are employed. But I think someone did ask the question about the immovable asset register. So I heard you talking about data capturers, verifiers, whatever. So can you give us the actual numbers in terms of all those that are dealing with immovable asset register? And also, what is your plan to deal with the scenarios that you've mentioned? One of the people invading land. I think in Gauteng we all know that many buildings that belong to the department are illegally occupied by foreign nationals. We know it as the portfolio committee when we're doing e-public hearing for the expropriation bill. In each and every town, we are being told that people are occupying the buildings of government illegally, and some are even charging rent to people. One of the things that I think was said, which has been echoed by Honorable Fastavik, is that this department has the potential to generate revenue. With the portfolio that it has of the properties, it has the potential to generate revenue. But somewhere acting DG, somewhere it gets lost. You have the potential of generating huge revenue through the portfolio of property that you have, but I don't know where you lose it. It's one of the things that you may look at in improving the functionality of the department, generating revenue. It has a large portfolio of properties. On a side note, I saw on the one Mongi was presenting, you know, the eye can go anywhere. As much as you're presenting that, but I saw huge sums as estimated for repairs. And recently we had minister talking about a kitchen that was renovated, so much million. So when I saw those huge sums, I became worried. Estimations of things. In my layman's point of view, not being an accountant, not being even a service provider, seeing that, I think that thing could have been repaired at a much lesser amount. So that we don't let the minister and deputy minister do investigation for this. Because the issue of 1.4 million kitchen It's out there. It's in the public domain. And I think the minister said that he's going to investigate that. So when Mongi was presenting that, I saw in some of, especially in the police station, some of the maintenance or repairs that have to be done, air conditioner, ceilings, the amounts that are there, they are huge. You may look at them, they are huge. In some of the things that are still there, I don't think they really are supposed to be like that. But again, they are estimations. Unfortunately, estimations become the reality and sometimes more. It has never been less. Thank you. Over to you.
Let me start, Chairperson. All right, thank you. Chairperson, apologies. I'm struggling to breathe a little bit. I think I'm coming down with a cold. Chair, let me start. I missed part of your comments, but I'll start with the last one that you raised, the issue of the kitchen repairs that were reported as expenses. I think there, as Public Works, we have failed ourselves in how we then explained the issue. So the a house, for instance, will be the first issue that will be reported to us will be the kitchen. And that will be the main item that we're going to do. But we're not going to go there and just fix the kitchen. We will look at what else is wrong in the house and fix everything all at once. So we did solicit a report on the kitchen, and we have actually itemized the bills. Those are available for scrutiny. You will see that it was more than the kitchen that was fixed. It was actually other items within the house. It was also a roof that was identified as an expensive item, but when you look at it, we couldn't just go and just fix the roof, because then a month down the line, the same executive will be asking us to come and fix something else. So when we are called, we attempt to fix whatever else is wrong in that facility. Along with that, there was a reported fumigation of 79,000 per house. That is not true. It was actually about 10 houses at the cost of about 7,000 odd per house. So those are the things that we I think maybe in our initial response to those questions, we didn't give out that detail. And by the time it went to the media, it was too late for us. But we did solicit that report, and it's available for scrutiny. Chair, the issue of revenue generation potential of the department, I agree with you, it's huge. And we have acknowledged such. We have been, Honorable Higlin and previously Honorable Graham Murray would help on the circular 135 that is not being finalized. We have finalized the circular. We have identified 300 properties that we have agreed that these are the properties that we're going to take out to the market. And those ones, they range from normal houses to agricultural land to just normal land that can be used commercially. And also, we even have landing strips, like small airports in various provinces that we are going to put out and request investors to look at them. That's just phase one of Circular 135. But in the meantime, to give comfort to Honorable Higlin, because you had raised previously people that are ready to submit proposals, we have created a sub document of the circular to deal with what is on the table. So if there are people that you know, organizations that would like to use a specific property, they need to contact the relevant regional office, because we have now standardized how they can deal with such applications. I know that the big committees are now looking at same. So those ones are welcome, and we are looking at them. Let me go back to the beginning. Honorable Van Staden, you had specific questions on are all our assets now on the register. I think that the simple answer will be those that we know of, yes, but there is potential, obviously, that we are still identifying properties that are just registered or is it unsurveyed, or so they're still coming onto the register. But that which we have, we are comfortable that we have. And the vulnerability of Public Works over the years, that we actually opened up to say, look, the issue of the asset register is a mess, and we open up to Auditor General. And every year, whatever finding that they pick up, we deal with it and we improve until we find ourselves where we are. So Honorable Higlin is justified to say she accepts the presentation, but cautiously, because it's an ongoing matter. We don't believe that an asset register is dated. It's a document that, or it's a system that will keep on growing as and when we develop assets, or we dispose assets, or we discover certain assets. The illegally occupied properties, it is a big issue that we are facing as a department, Honorable Sekolo. We do have relationships with the municipalities where we do have such issues where like big portions of land have been invaded. We do form, I don't know whether you want to call them task teams, between the municipality. In Cape Town, some of the land is included forestry land, so we have DFF as part of those steering committees where we deal with the communities that have invaded. But the bigger plan, obviously, is the Circular 135, where bigger portions of land are going to be let out to the market for investors to come and invest, and we're going to give them long enough leases for them to recover whatever money they would have spent, and obviously the properties revert back to state, because just guarding the facilities is not sustainable, nor is it enough for us. The specific questions my colleagues will deal with. Honorable Siwisa, you were asking about compliance. What do we mean when we say we comply? I think my colleague will deal with slide 23. I think that's the slide that was trying to explain. When we say our asset register compliance, what are the minimum requirements that we need to see on the system to say now we have got a compliant asset register, or at least with the assets that we do have? Is the system value for money? It's a difficult question. We did have areas where service providers did fail us as an institution, but it was growing pains because it's something that needed to happen for us to get to where we are today. So value for money, I would say yes, we do have an asset register, and it's a living document or a living system that we are working on. So if I can allow you and Sibonisa, yeah, to deal with the specific question. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Yes, I think just to add in terms of what Acting DG has indicated in terms of the asset register and that being totally up to date, like indicated, our dependency, like any other property owner, is on the deed. So we use that as our verification exercise, that which is on the deed records, and the deed records sit with the Department of Rural Development. And like indicated by my colleague, Mr. Sokela, we also go further and look at the CSG diagram, that's the second level of verification. It's ongoing in terms of also, like indicated, there are properties where there's no owner, ownership has been claimed, and in terms of the guidelines by National Treasury, if that is the case, then Public Works will have to absorb those properties into their immovable asset register. So like indicated by DG, it's live, it's constantly being updated, etc. So just to answer that particular question. In terms of Honorable Sansada, whether we have enough people capturing on the system, at the moment, to answer you, we need more data analysts. Yes, and I think we have data capturers, and we get support as well from our property managers in the region. And you'll see a lot of the questions we're also faced, that's the question is for property management, and we share the repository to execute the property management functions, which includes ensuring and safeguarding properties that are vacant, etc. Now, we do have a challenge with land because we have vast tracts of land that are vacant. Some are not strategically well located or positioned. So it's not going to be, it's going to cost millions of rands of taxpayers' money to guard those properties. However, we do acknowledge that the properties
like indicated by our honourable member, where you have properties that are invaded, and Mr. Keller, I think, raised it, where properties are illegally occupied. Now, in that regard, the HDA are working with the Department of Public Works for those properties that are illegally occupied, and there's a program then to what they call to formalize the informal settlement that has come through. So we work with the Department of Human Settlements, and specifically their entity, the HDA, to support the formalization of those properties, because you know, it will also support the housing backlogs, etc., that we have. And HDA is also running a program where they're providing support to the informal settlements in terms of formalizing it and supporting those areas with bulk services, etc. So we are working with HDA. They have a complete list, and those properties that are within the DPW ambit and that can be transferred, we will. However, in that regard, in some instances we have a challenge, because you find that there might be a state domestic facility on that land, like a police station in some instance, or a magistrate's court, etc., and that will require then that we go and subdivide and do more work on that. And that brings us to then also the aspect of the movable asset register and the announcements that will transpire in that regard, being a live system like we alluded to. I think Acting DG has covered the issue of Circular 135, especially with properties that are vacant and unutilized. We've identified that with the REMS and the RACE branch, and I think that strategy within the next year, those should go to the market. And then linked to that is the issue of whether we want to hold a property or dispose. We do undertake a feasibility study. Part of the investment unit that I'm in is to determine, number one, whether we would need that property for a use by our user, and that's where the user asset management plans that Honorable Hicklin, alludes to all the time, is that we need from the user departments to give us their strategies over the next 5 to 10 years. But you have some properties that, for example, you take residential properties that are outside a base or a police station or a court, and initially it was developed to ensure that their reactive time, for example, is quick and is in close proximity to a police station or whatever, in terms of the functionality that house is supposed to provide. But then you have a house that is far away and may not be needed and may cost a lot of money to, for example, redevelop just to generate a bit of income every month in terms of the market value, and we do have a valuation session. So the position might be, let's dispose. The disposal is also a form of revenue generation, except that we've got to work with Treasury to ring-fence that money. At the moment, if we dispose of a house or a piece of land, if it's approved, the money goes into National Treasury and not within the PMT. So finance will have to work on that proposal with us to make sure that that we retain that money and it forms part of the PMT, and I think that's also work in progress. Also supporting the issue, and I think Mr. Sokela will get into more detail in terms of getting the asset register to a particular level that it needs to be in terms of a compliant asset register that meets the relevant criteria is the vesting. Now, the vesting is not complete. There's still about 10,000 odd properties that are within the process of vesting. And the dependencies there are with the Department of Rural Development, where they've got committees that the property goes through to determine, for example, whether there's a provincial competency on that site, if there's a requirement by province, or is there national competency or it's a grey area and we determine how that property is going to be vested. So until vesting is completed, it also adds into the completeness of the asset register. There's also the, I think I covered the property management, I think DJ has covered there. The issues on the systems, the CIO will assist me to cover that. And also, I think, Sabanisa, if you could give more details about the service provider and what it actually did in terms of the value for money, both from the CIO perspective and yourself, and what the project entailed and the value that we got out of it. I have to indicate that we did get immense value to bring us to where we are at the moment. I think that should also, the question was also raised by Honorable Sewiza, so we will cover that accordingly. I think we covered how we verify the data that we have with deeds, with service, with Surveyor General, etc. The issue of consequence management, like indicated by Mongi, we have a capturer, we have a verifier, and we have an authorization person. So if something is proven as deliberate, then the labor, that portion would kick in on how we deal with that particular individual, because that will link into potentially the property being stolen, inverted commas, and we'll have to prove accordingly. Now, but coming back to properties that were strategic properties that were, I think there was a word that was used, but I would say, taken from the asset register for private property uses. Now that we detected that as part of our audit when we do the deeds download from the deeds office versus what we have on our asset register. When that reconciliation was done, we found that these are the strategic properties that actually are not on the immovable asset register. And when we did more investigation, we actually found that there was a relationship between province as well as the deeds office in National to actually siphon off our properties. So that actually shows the team here and the work that they are constantly doing, not only for the audit purposes, which is a massive task on its own, but also for protecting the state's assets as well. So, but if we want more information on those properties, we can also provide that. I just thought I would make that particular aspect. Now, Sabanisa will also talk to the number of graduates that we have employed, as well as brought them on a permanent basis onto supporting the movable asset register team. I think that he's done a lot of work in that regard, also from a personal level, pushing and making sure that that the people that have performed actually come on board, including we managed to find some very good people that were initially with the service provider that we brought on board, ENY, and brought those particular individuals and specialists as well as part of our team on a permanent basis. And I think that also supported the level of which we've improved the asset register. I think the capacity of CIO and Sabanisa will attend to that. Single solution. I think in developing a single solution, like in a single repository, that is our aim. As we get the asset register to the levels, and as indicated, we've improved substantially. We want to get a single repository for the state that will include national, provincial, as well as municipal land. But that's in the near future, and we need to work with your support, Honorable members. We would need to move towards that, and that will be great, but it's not a small exercise, because as you know, we have to cut across 278 municipalities, and we would need the support of COCTA and SALGA in that regard. And to be very honest, even with the IDPs in my planning component, it's very hard to solicit information from the municipalities. I don't want to make that an easy feat. It's not easy, but there we will need your support as well. But with regards to provinces, we've always been providing them with support. They are running different systems. Some of them are on Excel, or most of them are on Excel. But I think as whatever system, ERP solution we choose, and it's working very well, we're going to articulate that our provincial counterparts come on board with us, so that at least we'll have a repository that will talk to national and provincial within the next 5 years in a perspective that we have presented here. We'll continue to enhance that. The issue of the buildings and 98% and the vacant land parcels, I think we've covered that. We've got an assemblance of each and every facility that is vacant with our unutilized strategy, as well as the land parcels. Now, we haven't looked at the land parcels in detail as yet. I have to acknowledge that that is the next process we're going to be undertaking, and linking it to the GIS mapping to determine where is the strategically well-located land. So we have a lot of land parcels that it might be in mountainous, hilly regions that will serve no purpose. However, it may serve a purpose, for example, for agriculture. And we shared our database with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. We've also shared, towards integrated planning and development, we've shared our database with human settlements so that they can find suitable land so that it can address spatial imbalances. We could have redress and as well as ensure there's ownership of land for agriculture, but not any land, land that is suitable for agricultural development. So we work with our counterparts in that, and I must say the asset register comes into play in that regard quite nicely as well. The issue of condition, poor, fair, good, excellent, is just an indices to say what, and we acknowledge that we need to, chairperson, that we need to rework those. They're not in sequencing order. We acknowledge that. We'll work that with our GIS, with the widgets, as they call it, on the system. We'll get that going. But that's just an indices of the condition of the building. It's not detailed condition assessment. So what this does, if the building is poor, then we send it to our FM counterparts to work with the regions to do a detailed condition assessment. And that, based on the budget we have, as you know, we have limited budgets. We need about 47 billion odd. I think we're not even getting 7 billion towards from our users towards maintenance. But using these indices help us as a management tool to prioritize which buildings are going to be maintained, but also linked to the UMs in terms of what is important for the users in terms of their service delivery imperative. If a building is in poor condition and the user doesn't need the building anymore to support their functional requirements, the building come back to us, and then we look at letting out the building or disposing the building, dependent on what the investment analysis team reveals. So I think I've covered most of it. I think the issue of permanent, et cetera, can be addressed. The issue of the GPS coordinates, et cetera, I think the GIS people can just look at that. So, Vanessa, if you can assist me to also address Honourable Chairperson's question in around the former TVBC state, how and how far we've gone with that, and that the issue of how we record those assets and how far we've progressed linked to vesting, if you could link to that. And we note the issue of Telkom Towers, the underutilization of the building. I can't tell you now, Chairperson, whether that is indicative of what we are seeing there. We'll have to go back and look at that so I can give you an honest enough answer there. I apologize for that. I think I've covered most of the things. I'm just going to ask Sir Benisa and the CIO to cover the technical aspects of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the questions on the appointment of the service providers. At the time, the department, specifically this unit, Asset Register Management, had no resources. There were only three, when I joined the department as well, there were only three permanent officials and a few vesting contract workers that were based at the region. So, and we had to, because the department, there were disclaimers, I mean, from what, 2010-11 and 2011-12. And those disclaimers is like almost everything, all the assertions, whether it's completeness, whether it's existence. AG would simply quote the immovable asset guide and say, according to the immovable asset guide, the department shall record, and they will list all those, and they will say they could not trace all these assets. They will just quote the assertions as they are and start say it's a disclaimer. So then, in embarking on this project to actually to rebuild this asset register, then we had to appoint the service provider, but at the same time we ran a parallel process of recruiting, like I said, graduates, because when the service providers were appointed, we appointed project managers, we appointed interns, we also appointed management trainees. Currently, in terms of the current staff that we have, well, we created a permanent structure around 2016, and those positions were filled in 2017. In terms of a permanent structure, it's 72 posts, but we also have the other officials that are employed on contract. There are about 53, those that are employed on contract. But even the GM and the minister in our engagement, the bilateral, they've indicated that they will assist us too, because we need more resources to address all the issues that we have identified, all the challenges that we have. Because in fact, even the IR, I know, so if you go to slide 57, if you can just refer to slide 57. Honourable member, if I may just take you to slide 57. Slide 57, it shows it's an IR operating model. It deals with the different aspects of the IR. There is three circles there. The first one on the left, it's IR for compliance and reporting. So when we talk about the immovable asset register, we break it down into those three categories or three aspects. One of the questions from the honorable members was compliance. What do you mean by compliance? This is the aspect, this circle in blue, IR for compliance. You are referring to PFMA. There are many sections of PFMA. Your section 40, which is deals with the AFS, which was submitted on the 31st of May. Even GRAP, the GRAP standards, GRAP forms an integral part of the PFMA. GRAP is section 89 of the PFMA. So we need to comply with the respective GRAP standards, whether it's GRAP 17, GRAP 16, GRAP 103, it's various standards. And also in terms of compliance, we talk about the guidelines that were issued by National Treasury. So we also need to comply. That's what we mean when we say compliance or a compliant immovable asset register. But we have done, I think we have made good progress on this one, the IR for compliance and reporting. Apart from the disclaimers, we explained that we have addressed that issue. Now, where we are moving, where there's still a lot of work to be done, we refer to it as the IR for PMT business and service delivery. This is now we talk about the systems as well, because we have fragmented systems. We have legacy systems, for instance, for projects, your WCS, it's a legacy system for projects, even for property, although we have Archibus, but we still have PMIS. And we are still transacting on PMIS in terms of day-to-day maintenance, paying rates and taxes, etc. So even when we comply, we actually compile the financial statements. We need to use all these sources, different sources for assets under construction or WCS, or for payment of rates and taxes, or for disclosure note on rental data. This is the lease out. So now, in terms of the system, we need to get to a point, this is the ADG and management, to say, whereby, for instance, the legal systems, we switch them off. We need to get to that point. So that's why now, so that we can have a fully integrated system, because now, once you have your IR in Archibus, the other modules, because you still have WCS and you still have a PMIS. So that this is now the forecast to say, once we have made improvement, good progress on the IR for compliance and reporting, but there's still some work that needs to be done, which involves the issue of fragmented systems, so that we get to a point where we have a fully integrated system where IR is actually is the core, because everything is linked to the movable asset registry. And the third aspect where we refer to as the IR for the state, this is the where now we talk about the single repository. Honorable King, you spoke about the provinces. Let me say this. We work with the provinces on a regular basis. There is continuous engagement. In fact, even the second strategic objective of this unit is to provide guidance and support to the provinces. We have even developed a compliance criteria. We have their asset register. We assess them even before we finalize the annual financial statements of the department. We look at the provincial asset register to assess the issue of rights and obligation. Let me say this. Also, some of the provinces, most custodians appointed service providers around 2012-18, but there are provinces that did not appoint service providers, like KZN, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape. If you to ask them why, because we provided the support, our team at head office. They appointed the interns and graduates, and we provided the advisory, the support, the guidance to those provinces. And in that way, the government, I believe, saved some millions. If you were to check other provinces, how much they spent on the movable asset register budget, those three did not spend even a cent on service providers for the enhancement of the immovable asset register. So that IR for the state, it includes the single repository, and it is actually the in the performance agreement of our minister that we need to establish this single repository for all spheres of government. This is also for our new entity, Infrastructure South Africa, for them to monitor, to facilitate all the projects, also for integrated planning and coordination, and as well as the expropriation register, which was approved by the National Assembly. I don't know now whether it's with the National Council of Provinces, but it's also our responsibility that we will need to establish and maintain the expropriation register, which is totally separate from this current register that we have. Thank you for that. Let me just quickly go to the other issues. Like I've indicated, the capacity, yes, we have capacity that we have built over the years, but it's not enough, but we're engaging management, and the minister and the DM are assisting us. They've actually prioritized the IAR.
So while we're waiting for Sobenisa, I also didn't address the issue of KZN land parcels. So I can tell you that in a day when this flood disaster occurred, with Lebo and two team members of mine, we identified about 238 land parcels which we provided to KZN within the next day. And from there, they've done their criteria with HDA, matched it to bulk and suitable land, except because you didn't want to get into the problems that we had with flooding, etc. They then chose 18 land parcels in total. Yeah. But remember, the land was all over, right through the country, right through KZN. So, but it's suitable land parcels for development. So just wanted to indicate that that is how we use the tool and how effectively we use the tool with GIS as well.
Yes. Okay. How far are we with the resolving aging issues? As I indicated earlier, the main issue was on the restatement, the opening balance. Yes, we submitted the detailed reconciliation and supporting schedules in January, and it was audited by AG, and like I said earlier, the restatement was reduced from 129 billion to 1.4 billion. And that 1.4 billion restatement actually includes CES projects. Of that 1.4, CES is 900 million. And like I said, we have also resolved that issue with CES because it's assets under construction. We have complied with the PFMA and all the guidelines in terms of the completed projects that were transferred to the department. So we had a meeting yesterday with AG whereby this matter of SEPs was actually resolved. So the disclaimer of 2021-22, it has actually been resolved, and you can, the honorable members can confirm, and the GM and the chairperson can confirm this with AG. Like I said, now the process of auditing the financial statements for 2022-23 has begun on the 1st of July. Of June, sorry, on the 1st of June. I'm way ahead. I'm looking forward to the unqualified audit. On the on the 1st of June, yes, we are making progress. Like I said, the issue was never on the management assertions, just to allay your fears. The issue was on the opening statement, the restatement that we made due to the nature of the business, of government, our assets. Like, for instance, in the slide 12, one of the members spoke about slide 12, where they indicated that our work is not done. Yes, we are being honest. For instance, this is land. Let me say, the R293, the other issue, when you look at slide 12, on slide 12, we have land parcels that are not yet recognized by the department. For instance, the ones where we have R293 built properties, these were erroneously registered in the name of the municipalities. Now, for us to recognize them, we need a council resolution. Without a council resolution in terms of the draft standard, we cannot recognize those land parcels. However, the buildings are recorded in the asset register because this is police station, this is a court, it's a prison, etc. But the underlying land, we can only recognize it by following a formal process. It's actually a legal matter. And also in KZN, you also have Ingonyama Trust, where our facilities are built on Ingonyama Trust. There are engagements, we are engaging Ingonyama Trust. We have a draft MOA with Ingonyama Trust, and we'll be having a meeting in the next 2 weeks or so to discuss the issue of SDFs and the issue of surveying, because we need to survey, because we find that our facility is sitting on a huge farm. So we need to conduct survey so that then that portion can be registered in the name of the state, in line with the Ingonyama Trust, because they do recognize that those facilities that were built prior to 24 April 1994, they belong to the state. Anything built before 24 April, they belong to the state. So these are the land parcels. It's in terms of the act, and even the erroneously vested, just maybe back then, the vesting was not structured. That's why now people are just vesting properties. But as we work with the provinces, Chairperson, when we started this program, probably the focus would be just on historical names. But now we have moved further. We are now looking into even properties that are registered in the name of the province, because we have realized that there is also erroneous vesting. Even though, so we can't just look at the registered owner and say provincial government of Gauteng, and then you think everything is in order. The other thing that we'll be working on is vacant land. So in as much as provinces have vested, the improved land, where we even have a police station, but likewise they've also vested vacant land. We'll be working with them as well. So if we identify land, because according to the existing guidelines, vacant land, the default custodian of vacant land is DPW in the former RSA. And in the former TVBC, maybe also addressing your question, in the former TVBC states and self-governing territories, the custodian of land is rural development. However, we have facilities, so we need to ensure our facilities, your police station, magistrate court, etc., and the houses that you spoke about, Jefferson, that they are recorded in the IR. However, we are not the custodian of the land. The land of former TVPC states, self-governing territories, the custodian is rural development. We are the main or custodian or default custodian, even of vacant land, in the former RSA territory. So even the issue of the houses, yes, we address it, of course, working also with the Department of Rural Development. I think I've addressed that issue.
Chairperson, with your permission, if I can get the CIO to answer some one or two of the questions that we haven't covered in terms of the archivist. And then just also to indicate that I think with Honorable Van Schalkwyk, we have documented the number, for example, of the SDS that we have, the vesting with Gotthard per province, as well as the R293 properties. The R293 properties, I think there's a detailed submission coming to yourself. I think at National we have about 459 that we would have to process accordingly with the provinces. So that is coming through in more detail. I think it's on its way to the chairperson, just to give you comfort there. Sorry, I missed that. Thank you. CIO, perhaps 2 minutes? Sorry.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. In terms of the system where it's hosted and if DPW owns the data, yes, the system is hosted in our data centers and on our infrastructure in terms of servers for computing. And we do have control of that data. We back it up every day, not only the data, but the system configurations is, of the system itself in case there's a disaster. So we have a temporary DR site, which we use one of our data centers in the Johannesburg Regional Office, where we have a full-fledged DR computing infrastructure in terms of backup solutions and also the systems themselves. The plan there is that Johannesburg Regional Office is finalizing our DR site in Johannesburg. We have identified the site. So the intention is for this year, I think they are close, they are 99% close to complete that DR. So we, the plan is that we will then move into that DR site. And also we do have DR capability for our services with CISA also, where we replicate some of our data in terms of that. So from a disaster perspective, should the system fail or should a disaster strike one of our data centers, we will be able to recover. And we do have a team in-house that is monitoring the backups on a daily basis and also working around the load shedding issues that we have. So they do monitor in terms of the reports whether their backups are successful. And also those administrators also, they do give reports to management to have a look in terms of that, because it's one of the key focus areas when it comes to the risk of cybersecurity for us. So that is one area in terms of should the system fail or if we do have. And also if we, the Archibus company, we don't find each other, then we do have control in terms of the data ourselves. And if there is a new ERP system that comes on board, we should be able to look at the current data that we have and be able to import it into the new system. Yes, we own the data. And yes, we do own the data, and also the level of customization that we have done, that IP also is for us, so we have a copy of that. In terms of, we only then pay for the right to use in terms of the solution itself. In terms of the administrators themselves, as they come on board, whether from contracting perspective or administrators in-house, what happens is that if you are appointed at that role also, we do engage our internal physical security component to do vetting on them. I must say that we only do that on appointment. We don't do it regularly in terms of security clearing them. But the people that we bring on board, we make sure that they go through that security vetting as before, actually, if it's a contractor or if it's an appointment, that we get that security report on hand. And as part of our security policies also, we make sure that we do an induction on them so that they know also that what is expected of them in relation to data security. So we do an in-depth induction in terms of that. And also we make them, for the service providers, if they are administrators, we make them to sign non-disclosure documents for us to make sure that they don't, even though we know the level of control of that, but it's just for us to make sure that whatever intellectual property discussions and information that they have, they shouldn't be able to share with other people. When it comes to access control in terms of the system, we do have policies in-house in terms of how we manage access control. How it happens is that the users that are registered on the system, they are first approved by the business units. So the supervisors and the managers, then they do put the applications to register those people. The other branches also, they do require, in this instance, Archibus. You cannot get registered until you are trained on the system so that we minimize the risk of erroneous issues and data corruptions and all that. So they do, we do have to train them first. Then after they have been trained, then they can be registered into the system. That is one control. The second control is that the administrators from ICT perspective, on the policy, we stated that they are not supposed to do business transactions. So they are not supposed, if you have seen, Mongi can add an asset onto the system. Only if the business approaches ICT, which is a formal process, then we document that as part of our change management process, which we have an in-house committee also that looks at the changes. And that change register also has been audited by internal audit, and also AGSA, when they audit us, they want to see what changes were done. And then we are able to account to say, business requested us to move this part of data to this part of the system. So that is the control that we have in terms of that. And on a monthly and bi-quarterly basis, we also look at, from an administrator perspective, there is an internal deputy director that reviews in terms of the activities that the administrators like Mungi, what they have done, was there an incident logged, or was it a request from business and is it recorded, can we account, was it approved at the right level. So they do that monitoring, and we also have tools also that look at that to say, was there a user registered, and this user, is it one of the departments. So we do have the tools that monitors, and also the system itself has audit trail and logs. So as part of that review and monitoring, we have system reports that we draw and look at what changes and what movements were done in the system from an access control perspective. But for the business, because my colleagues I know also they are undercapacitated, in terms of the transactions that are done, that is, it's a huge task for them to do, but we will be working with them to look at that report also to say, with the tools that we have, can they also monitor the transactions that were done on the system in terms of checking what have been edited, added, and is it in line with their QA and processes for authorization. So we do have those tools, but from an administrator perspective, that's what we do. And also the security team, the IT security team, they also on a quarterly basis then look at the system activities of the administrators, look at those reports that are generated by the tools that are monitoring, especially from an access perspective. And in terms of security, is the solution itself secure? It's hosted in our network, so the network we have control over in terms of security. So we have deployed firewalls that we also try to, we are protecting from an external infiltration. So we are able, we have a dedicated team that is looking at the network 24 hours. So we have focused on that to say, from a firewall perspective, you guys must monitor and respond. So we have a response team in terms of that. And also we have security solutions in-house, like your endpoint protection. I don't want to get into details. So that team also has a dashboard where they're looking at high, medium, and risk incidents as they are occurring. And then we try and respond within that time. I do get that report. I think they signed one report that is coming through. I must mention, Honorable Chairperson, that currently with the Akibus system, because our software, we haven't done the upgrade to the latest software in terms of that. We have a little bit of, software updates that we need to do. So it's one of the key critical issues that I must deal with before the next audit in terms of that. So, but I have then tasked the security team to say they must zoom in and protect those servers that are hosting the architecture, the Akibus solution. But from a overall enterprise security perspective, I will say you will never know with the cyber attacks where they are, but we do have the team that is constantly on a 24-hour basis looking at the systems and the network itself. And also we're trying to create awareness from the users also to make sure that we don't get compromised at that level also in terms of that. But in terms of how the system and the design of it, in terms of architecture, we have those segregation of duties, and also the role-based is very important for us. So if Mongi has is administrator A, he cannot do administrator B in terms of that, of the functions and the level of privileges that he has on the system. The same for the capturer and the authorizer and all that. So that is another control that we are able to monitor if a person moves different profiles at a time. So we are able to pick up that. And in terms of the total number of people that are using or users that are using the system currently, in total we have 795 officials on the system registered and active. But specifically for the IAR module, we have 45 officials in terms of those three roles, and also including excluding the administrators, the ICT administrators that we are talking to. In terms of the GIS solution, we have 29 users registered, trained, and used, and registered on the system. And I must mention that also with the verifiers, they have a mobile app, so that is as and when they register them and train them in terms of them executing that work. I'm not sure, DDG, if I have missed another one, any one of them. Or the lifestyle audit, I think that is a security, physical security function. I wouldn't say that I will get those kind of reports, but I know that they do security vetting of the new people that we bring on board, so that we're able to manage from a security perspective.
Thank you, Chair. I think we submit now. Thanks. On slide 31, your question on Telkom Towers, whether the half is used, half is unused. We do have shown you there that half is utilized and half is unutilized. So we do it per building footprint based on how we have captured it on the ground. And also on the issue of coordinates, the issue that was there before, Honorable, it was before the GIS was capacitated in the department. Now that
3-1 or 4-1? 3-1.
Yeah, that one. There is a red, there's red buildings and yellow buildings, and if you check the legend, it shows us that the yellows are the ones that are utilized, and then the red are unutilized. So Telkom Towers, it sits on two streets. The first part sits on the other street and the other one. So if we check. Oh, okay.
No, remember I was not referring only on Telkom Towers. Telkom Towers was an example. Mm-hmm. Whether are we when we say 98% of buildings being utilized.
I think the issue about our facilities being occupied is mostly our residential facilities where we're housing and defense officials. So the bigger buildings are the ones where we're experiencing vacancies, and it's mostly because they're not yet renovated to the level where they are utilizable. And that is mainly as a result of governments being more concerned about delivering infrastructure for service delivery than accommodation. And therefore, we push service delivery infrastructure than accommodation, hence the big criticism that we're relying on leases. So now we are having the program that CASA is running, the precinct development, the ROT program, to then bring the office infrastructure also on par. But most of our, when we say most of our facilities are occupied, we mainly refer to our residential properties where we house subs and defense.
If I may then just come in on that note, to me, it doesn't talk to what we see on the ground.
Yeah.
Saying 98% of the buildings are utilized. No, it's not true.
I think it's a matter of numbers. We can quantify again, Siboniso. Let us re-quantify. I think it's a matter of numbers. If we're talking about 29,000 buildings that we own as government, and only 2% is unused. What is 2%? 2% would be like just under 3,000 properties that are unoccupied. Yeah.
We have a list.
So 2,000 properties, if you encounter them on the street, they are a lot, Chairperson. Compared to the bigger picture, they are just under 3%. But we will, let me undertake.
No, let me come in on that one. In my other life, I was dealing with numbers.
Mm.
Before I came here.
Yeah.
In my other life, how I'm dealing with one another on a day-to-day basis. So if you were saying PM, you are utilizing Department of Public Works and Infrastructure Division as much as 98%, would not be talking about these leases that you are paying. We would not. Honestly, that point, we would not. To me, this 98% and 2%,
I agree, Chairperson. Let's undertake
it
to go
cannot be. I think you need to, well, not today or whatever, but you need to bring the court numbers. To me, I don't agree. If you had said 12%, 88%, I think that would be closer to what it is actually. But saying 2%, no 2%.
Okay. We'll bring the list. Chairperson will undertake to verify our facts and bring the table.
Because the question that may come in is this one: why are you paying such huge amounts on leases? that is the question that comes in when you're saying you are utilizing 98% of
residential.
Then the question would be: no, we are not saying residential here. We say 98% of the building, which means all of the buildings. Because you didn't say these and this, you said 98% of buildings. You didn't specify which building will qualify.
Yeah, Chairperson, we'll bring the list, and most of the buildings that are vacant, the bigger buildings, are in Pretoria. So I can tell you offhand which are the buildings as well. Like Civitas Public Works House.
I'm not saying you must mention them, but I'm saying these numbers, they're not realistic.
Sure.
The reality is not only about Victoria. This department owns buildings, you can take. You have, I once mentioned, I don't know whether were you there, the issue of the water scout building, in which you have been doing a project today, I don't know, since 2002, I'm not sure when. That building is only 5% that has been occupied. Majority is not occupied because it's under construction since then.
Chairperson, we note we'll bring a presentation per province on the building. Yeah, we will do that, and then we'll also verify with our property managers in the regions as well.
Okay, do we have any follow-up questions? Just 1 minute, so that we give it to the M to hold up. Honourable President, Honourable Solo, Honourable
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide 39, it shows that the total valuation of our assets is 148 billion. Can I just ask if the following information is available, of what is the date of this valuation, when it was done, and what was the value before the last valuation was done? If that information can be provided, if not now, can it be sent to us in a later stage, please? Thank you.
Chair, thank you for the indulgence. In terms of an interesting point that the acting DG highlighted on Circular 135, I just wanted to ask if it's possible that we be furnished with the exact date of the publication of that particular circular, and if we can be furnished with the phase one total number of properties that the acting DG said 300, if we can be provided with those, it would be very interesting. We do oversight, so perhaps part of the buildings that we, or properties that we've been talking about, are included in phase one, and then we can be able to communicate accordingly to our constituencies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check with Ms. Sasa about the 18 land parcels that have been identified. Is it 18? Because I have a response from the minister that says 15. I don't know, maybe it's an updated list that you are having. Two, Chair, while we are speaking about lists of properties, I think
in one meeting there's a list that was requested and it's still not in. I was trying to check my email service in because I know I'm the person who requested a certain list of properties and it's still not in, and now we are requesting another one. And the deadline was the 31st of May. And now we are requesting another list again, whereas we are still waiting for the one that was supposed to be submitted on the 31st. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Just a quick response on this. Some of them, the request that our questions should be sent.
Yes. It's Chairperson on the valuation, so the Minister can come in, but it's at end of March 2022. That's the valuation in terms of as we presented in the financial statements. If memory serves me, the previous value was in around 145 billion Sibanisa. Yes, so I think we covered there, but we're happy to provide any additional information. I think circular 135, we will provide that information as DG has committed to by my REMS component. The list of the land parcels for KZN will also provide that. I did the Honorable Sarisa, it was off the top of my head, so we'll provide that list to be more accurate. I will send that, and as I said, the list that I'm aware of that is due at the committee is for the R293 properties, and it's on its way, Chairperson, like I indicated. I think that should come through within this week. So we did sign it off, so thank you very much.
Thank you for this presentation and for all the responses. We're hoping that what has been requested to be submitted to the committee over to you, dear.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to all the honourable members' comments and questions. You know, Chair, like you rightfully said, we have just arrived. But even if you have just arrived, when you look at the properties at Public Works, it's a huge memo task. And in my opening, I was very clear and open that from what we have been presented to us, myself and the Minister, is that I think that at some stage, all officials dealing with the asset register should come up with a better strategy and plan on how we present the asset register. Because I found myself last month answering questions before the appropriation committee, and a question was put to me that is our asset register complete and credible? It is because they were told that it's complete. Now, this language is, I don't think it's correct, Honorable Chair, that we keep on saying that completeness, and that is English, you know. The asset register at Public Works is huge. I think the language we must start using, and which SASA and the rest of the team must start using, that phase A in terms of these buildings has been completed and this is what it is. Phase two of land, I'm giving examples, Honorable Chair, because as we are sitting here, we are saying that the land has been captured. At the same time, we are saying we've got 278 municipalities which are not coming to the party, which are difficult. You are then raising an issue, Honorable Chair, of homeland governments. Now, when the officials explain it, they want to explain it in English, whereas we are just talking purely how many assets have you got in the system, how many are not there, how many are still being found. In my opening, I was very clear that every day you are going to get people saying there's land portions, there are buildings that are dilapidated, that are being used for the wrong things. Now, we can talk as much as we want, Honorable Chair, in terms of the staff that we have as interns, the staff as we have as this year. In my opening, I was very clear to say that this needs a dedicated accountant who works around the clock just on this. The official said to me, they have accountants. I'm not disputing that. I am talking about a person who you are going to hold accountable, that you, accountant, what is it that's happening here? Because, Chair, when you say numbers, you are correct. If somebody says 98% of something is occupied, it is something else. Now, when Ms. Subban responds, she then talks about Civitas and Public Works House, which are another topic. If we must even go into it, it's something else. We can't even go there. We must not even talk about it here. And maybe they will include it in their report. Now, me, Chair, you know, sometimes you, when you are new in a thing and they tell you that this thing is blue, when you can see that it is not blue. Now, I am saying that Akibus will never work unless it is an integrated Akibus. We can't have Akibus that is capturing our properties that Public Works is joined, just jointed from the supply chain management and everything else, because with the AG, you are always going to be in the red. Always, Honorable Chair. Now, for me, we can talk and talk and be blue in the face. When we arrived, the minister and myself, that is the first thing we raised around the IT at DPWI. That if you have an Akibus that is not talking to supply chain, that is not integrated to the rest of the things that you do, and you have people in this branch, which is the race and REMS branch, and they capture things, and they're using the system. But that system, you cannot actually link it to your supply chain. Then what are you doing? Because at the end of the day, the Auditor General does not audit in that fashion. It audits holistically. So we keep on saying that there must be an integrated IT system that covers everything at Public Works. And I'm very happy that the last official gave a very clear explanation that if Akibus goes, no data will be lost. If this happens, this is not going to happen. It is secured, it is covered, which means that there is a bakery that only sells bread and does not sell bread and chocolate cake and muffins, which means that there is an integrated system that can be used at DPWI that is going to give you an integrated system, which is holistic, which includes everything, from supply chain to everything. Because I think that what people are scared of is change. Once you talk change, people want to get on top of the table and bang the table. When you are talking about a solution that is going to make things easier for everybody. Now, I am saying it can't be, Chair, that our duty is to keep on coming to the portfolio committee that is doing oversight, and all the time we are submitting the same reports. We cannot be broken records. Every time you come here, the portfolio committee is going to ask for a thing 10 times. So if people say something is there, when a report is requested, the report must come in. And I hope that the acting DG is taking note of this, that we cannot default on reports. When officials say in 7 days we are going to submit a report, it must be there. And if a list is there, Honorable Chair, it must be there. I think by now I'm famous for a wrong wording. I always tell people that if you have done zero, you must say zero. Don't say you have done five when there's actually zero, because when you cannot produce the five, it becomes something else. So when you know you have not done something, you must say that I'm still on step one. That is where I am. But for me, that when we also say in the near future, it comes back to your comments that you started with, Honorable Chair, the number of years that this process is being done. Now, when we say as a department that in the near future we'll have done this, for me, I think that we must start being clear on what is it that we have, what is it that we think is not there, so that we don't end up with the language of 98%, but not being able to explain ourselves that when we say 98% has been occupied of what, and being able to differentiate what are we talking about. For me, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that the department will comply with what is expected of it in terms of the reports, and that the numbers will be revised and proper numbers will be submitted in terms of numbers, which gives us a percentage which talks to the real issue. Because we keep on speaking, Honorable Chair, about real time. Now, for me, real time is that I must be able to press on a system and it must be able to tell me how much land we have in the Northwest, in Limpopo, or anywhere in the country. Now, I think that it looks like a far-fetched dream, but it should not be, because on the system, when they showed us today, you are able to actually see a building with this description and where it has got a title deed. And surely because the department works by first verifying with the deeds office, I think that somewhere you just need a turnaround strategy on how you intensify purely getting to an asset register, which should at the end of the day be called as an asset register that is credible. And with that, I would like to thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you so much, Minister. Thank you so much, Deputy Minister, for your rounding off comments on this meeting. They really giving us hope that this department will achieve. In fact, from what we started on, in reality, there has been an improvement. That one we can't run away from, but we can't let you rest on your laurels. We have to ask these questions. We have to equip you so that you work very hard to deliver what you are expected to do. Thank you so much. I think we will then deal with one of our items, which was the minutes. So you may be released. Thank you so much. The next meeting will be virtual. And I think Gigi is still around. On that one, we come on the next meeting, we're dealing with the pump. We'll no longer be dealing with the item that we sent to you, and then you have said that. We're dealing with the pump. The village pump. And you know, we'll get that another hot potato. Honourable Members, we have the minutes of the last meeting. Honourable Hickman, before she went away, there are some issues that she has raised lastly for correction. So the issue of the minutes, Honourable Members. Are there any other corrections than the ones that were sent by Honourable Hicklin in terms of spelling and all that? You saw them, eh? So, honourable members, if there are no other corrections, as honourable, I think one thing that you need to note on today, when you're preparing today's meeting, I don't think we dealt with the apologies. Honourable, please set an apology. Yeah, an apology. Honourable,
Minister,
an apology. Mr. Shuaib, our funeral advisor. As all know, he is not well, so there's also an apology. So when you are capturing the minutes, please capture those for today. So may I get then a mover for that these minutes are a true reflection of what we discussed last week? Honorable Pitolo, move. Honorable Jabo, second. Thank you, honorable members. Honorable members, we had a very... Thank you, honorable members. I really wanted to appreciate the robust, constructive way that you have dealt with today's meeting. And in fact, honorable members, as usual, and also we miss seeing you, not on the screen. Honorable Mashana said that he has been missing us a lot. So we really miss the two members, honorable members, had to rush. They are catching flights, so they had to rush. They asked to be of a cute particular. They were with us, we were deliberating on the report. Thank you again.
Yes. Chairperson, I have a concern. It seems as if we are still being undermined by the department. We were expecting a list of, I was trying to budget the list that we expected on the 37th. And there wasn't any apology that was sent, none. Even today, nobody until I mentioned it to say, now we are requesting another day, and we are still waiting for another day. And it's almost 2 weeks or so waiting. The list was supposed to come on the 31st, and nobody saying anything. And that thing is becoming consistent. It's becoming a consistency where the Department of Public Works not to send us anything that we are requesting. Because I even thought that maybe I missed the email somewhere in between. I'm busy scrolling through my email, but nothing. So there's a concern that needs to be arranged for the minister, but to say that he must get his house in order. We've been dealing with this before. They know how we operate, but now they are being consistent. I don't know if they're taking advantage that it's a new minister or whatever, but they are not being undermined by the department.
I think your concern is in order. It is something that we are dealing with. Also, please write to them that before the meeting of next week, we must by Monday get this information that we have requested. When they say that they go to submit a written information, they must do so. Thank you so much, members. The meeting is adjourned.
The fuse is when you put it in your room and you put the sticks in and
the room. Chapter 6. Yes, I'm going to side note.